Blog Talk Radio.
I'm a truth terrorist. I'm a knowledge gangster. I'm a black history hitman. I'm a lie killer, urban gorilla. I gotta be a roughneck.
Free the Black Panthers, FCBP. Stand for free the Black Panthers. And fuck the black police. That 13th Amendment, trying to make a slave of me. You can lock my body, can't trap my mind, not forever be free.
Okay,
free the Black Panthers, FCBP. Stand for free the Black Panthers, and fuck the black police. Feds infiltrated our movements for black leadership roles. But we still here, finna build here, fuck coin tail bro.
Show,
they got me started, lying hearted, I'm the new Mufasa. And I'm all about Umoja, first in Gruz Usaba. Let's bring back the black families, we need our father. Single mama, son and daughter, that's root of the problem. Wise up, we wise up, unity so powerful. Black banks, black schools, black on black power moves. You telling lies, if you think this shit won't be televised. Black power, be scared guys, they be standing there like they paralyzed, huh? We say fuck the system, cause we above the system. We keep ARs and pistols, shotguns that's worth a crystal. But that's for self-defense, make sure we have no issues. Be sure to leave it at the door if you have it with you. This for them freedom fighters, that lost their freedom. Until they freedom, we screaming carpe diem. This for the general, King Khalid Muhammad. We gon' make your day a holiday, I fucking promise.
Free the Black Panthers, FCBP. Stand for free the Black Panthers, and fuck the black police. That 13th Amendment, tryna make a slave of me. You can lock my body, can't trap my mind, not forever be free.
Okay,
free the Black Panthers, FCBP. Stand for free the Black Panthers, and fuck the black police. Feds infiltrated our movements for black leadership roles. But we still here, finna build here, fuck coin tail bro.
RBG, 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 RBG. My sisters, my brothers, the council, the elders, yeah, that's really all I need. We suited, we booted, don't do it, you stupid, we head to the armory. Black woman and goddess, regardless, my heart just don't fuck with misogyny. Bullshit, I don't tolerate it. Melanated, so you gotta hate it. Barack fucked up another conversation. Trump finna get inaugurated, damn. Unify or die, nbpp.org.
First and foremost, the new Black Panther Party, no other Black Panther Party, we are not violent. We are for self-defense and self-determination. The most violent group in this country are the police. What is taking place by the police department to black people across this country is ethnic cleansing and genocide. It has escalated since the day that Barack Obama was inaugurated in 2008. We have a people who are only 13% of the population, yet we make up 80% of the prisons. We have 50% unemployment rate in the black community, and it's actually even more than that because they're not counting our people that are in the prison. The 13th Amendment says you cannot be made a slave or indentured servant unless you commit a crime. The 14th Amendment forced our people to be subjects of this government. We never had any say in that. We need our own nation. Black power, black power, black power, brothers and sisters. This is the new Black Panther Party for Self-Defense nightly broadcast, coming to you live here in the belly of America, KKK. Sending a shout out to all of our people that are listening all over the planet Earth. Special shout out to our people in Africa and the many countries of Africa that are listening. As we know, it is indeed the late night hour. Same goes for you guys that are listening in UK, all over the East, Australia, China, all these places that are popping up on the switchboard. Shouts out to our people that are listening in the Caribbean islands and the West Indies, as well as the people who are listening in Central America, South America, all over the planet. And last but certainly not least, to our brothers and sisters that are right here with us in the belly of the beast in America, KKK, we thank you for your continued support of the new Black Panther Party. Be sure to support the new Black Panther Party and this broadcast by going to our website at www.nbpp.org. nbpp.org. That's nbpp.org. For those of you who are regular to this program, you know that Wednesday night is the night that we do our Your Immunity Project COVID pandemic update, which is hosted by Dr. Aleem Muhammad and the Your Immunity Project, doctors, scientists, researchers, and brothers and sisters that are participating in this research project with the Your Immunity Project. And with that being said, since this pandemic started, we have been on top of all of the current issues. We have gotten and presented verified facts and information from not only our doctor, but your doctor, Dr. Aleem Muhammad, who has decades of a history, of a background of countering the death policies, the crimes against humanity, the biological and chemical weaponry of Anthony Fauci. Since way back in the days when the HIV virus first came on the scene, and Dr. Aleem, along with the doctors of Africa and the doctors in America, came out very forthright with what needed to be done to not only cure, treat, and address what was going on with our people with the HIV, but also addressing vaccines as a whole and how they have been adversely affecting our people. This was long before the COVID pandemic hit the scene. Now that this pandemic, and we do say it is a pandemic, it is not a true pandemic, because this is not a true natural virus that has affected the planet. This is indeed a man-made virus, a weapon of mass murder, a major crime against all humanity that has hit the planet Earth. Now, those of you who have been listening, you know that not only we've been playing the replay of the Your Immunity Project, in which Dr. Aleem has weekly calls every Tuesday. They do their calls on Tuesday, and we upload the information on Wednesdays for you to be on time and on point as to what they have uncovered, discovered, instructing, and letting us know as to what the time is and what should be done to protect yourself, your loved ones, and our people as a whole. So with that being said, we are not only going to play the Your Immunity Project from yesterday, but I feel it is very timely and very important that we remind the people as to the wicked games that are being played. We, for what is it, 11 nights straight, played clips from the Human Rights Grand Jury Tribunal that took place internationally, in which we were able to get the actual audio from the hearings that took place through the month of February, in which doctors, scientists, virologists, pathologists, historians, economists, victims, you name it, from around the planet, from the Americas, North America, South America, in Europe, from Africa, from India, Australia, outlined the truth as to what actually has taken place from the unleashing of this SARS-2 coronavirus that is indeed a man-made virus that was unleashed and caused loss of life. Not from the virus in and of itself, but from the treatment of the virus in the hospitals, where the so-called treatment, mistreatment in the hospitals, in which a protocol was put in place by Anthony Fauci and the National Institute of Health, the CDC, and the Center for Medicaid and Medicare, in which the treatment was more deadly than the virus in and of itself, when the protocol was to give the deadly concoction of remdesivir, that cause loss of life. This is facts. It is documented. This is not conspiracy theory. This is conspiracy therapy, because there are those who have truly conspired. Who is the who? The World Health Organization. Who are the parties behind telling the entire planet Earth that this was a virus that caused people to be locked down in their homes, businesses to be shut down, churches, mosques, synagogues, all places of religion to be shut down. There's been a total paradigm shift, schools to be shut down, families to be subjected to all kinds of tyranny and division, scared to go see loved ones. Behind the media hysteria that was put out, when all the while, Dr. Eileen with Your Immunity Project came out from the beginning and said that we needed to be taking low-dose alpha interferon through the Paxlovid, taking those essential vitamins and minerals such as vitamin C, vitamin D, zinc, to keep our immune built up, getting plenty of sunlight, drinking plenty of water, taking those natural herbal supplements to keep your immune up to date. And then come to find out there were doctors all across the planet who had treatments that were effective and working, such as ivermectin, which is a medication that has been around for decades. But because it is no longer under a patent and can be distributed generically and very inexpensively, was not allowed to be part of the treatment protocol, in which the doctors who were using it were curing people of COVID. Monoclonal antibodies, hydrochloroquine, alpha interferon, these are medications and treatments that have been around for decades that were more effective, safer, and not deadly, like the remdesivir protocol that is still in effect. When the research has come out to find out that it was known that remdesivir caused loss of life in 4 out of 5 people in less than 2 weeks. So the mass death that we saw, if you recall, pay attention, the majority of the deaths took place in hospitals. Why is it that people who stayed home and quarantined didn't die? These are things that are actual facts. This is not stuff that we are making up. And we had the doctors and scientists to verify it. Yes, we even played the white doctors. Because you know, Negroes, y'all don't believe it till you hear from the white man. We had black doctors, white doctors, Indian, you name it. All nationalities participated in the grand jury human rights testimonial that we've played. You can just go back to the archives here on demand for the New Black Panther Party blog talk and go to archives, and you will see the testimonials upon testimonials upon testimonials. Oh, you will hear, that is. And do your own research. Follow up on your own. We are bringing you information. Any intelligent person should want to do their own research. But we brought the information to you and continue to bring the information to you. Now, as I said, those of you who listen on the regular, you know every Wednesday we play the Your Immunity Project, in which we will definitely play in just a few seconds. But what we wanted to do right now is to take you back from the beginning. Take you back to the beginning. When Dr. Eileen explained what this virus was, a Frankenstein lab-made virus. And we're going to play that. But before we play that, if anyone is awake and paying attention, you will realize or find out that just last week it came out that Pfizer knew of the deadly consequences of this lethal injection. We're not even going to call it a vaccine. This lethal injection, to add insult to injury, was given, forced, coerced on the masses of the people. Here in America, they say over 150,000 people have taken this jab. That's almost half the population. We have a pop, 179,000, almost half the population of America. That's supposed to have 329 million people. Over 179 million people have received this deadly jab. And it is indeed deadly, as it has a close to 5% mortality rate. Hell, the COVID in and of itself only had a 0.25%. COVID didn't even have a 1% mortality rate. Not even a 1%, a quarter of a percent mortality rate. Yet the jab has a 5% mortality rate. And what came out in the Pfizer documents, over 9 pages of adverse side effects. Chronic deadly side effects ranging from HIV to cancer to sterilization. Do you hear me? This is the biggest, one of the biggest crimes against humanity. I'm not going to say the biggest, because we still say till today, and we will not let go, that the biggest crime against humanity to ever take place was a transatlantic slave trade. That's right. That was the biggest crime against humanity. We lost 400 to 500 million, and we're still holding those responsible accountable. We're still holding those responsible accountable. We're not going to let them get away with that. We demand reparations. But let me get to the message at hand. What we are about to play is another clip from another doctor before the Pfizer release came out. And Pfizer tried to hide it, yo. They were able to somehow work out an agreement with the FDA and CDC that the release of the side effects and adverse reactions would not be made public for 75 years. But whistleblowers, those who work inside the Pfizer camp, got the documents released, and we now find out what we had already played. I played this clip before about the side effects, the adverse effects of the side effects. We're going to play it again. Then we're going to play the original clip of Dr. Eileen when he explained what this COVID was all about. And everything he said panned out to be true. And this is why every Wednesday we get updates and make sure we hear from Dr. Aleem and the Your Money Project. We're not listening to a devil like Anthony Fauci. We're going to listen to the God, the black man, Dr. Aleem Muhammad and his team. But before that, before I play that clip of Dr. Aleem when it first started, and the Your Immunity Project from yesterday, I want you to hear this clip from the Your Immunity Project. Check it.
Next, I'd like to welcome the next presenter, Dr. Meryl Nass. And
I apologize, not the Your Immunity Project. This clip from Dr. Meryl Nass, who's going to talk about how they were hiding the adverse effects of the COVID jabs. We played this before. We've been putting the pressure on, and the truth is coming out. Now it's come out. Now we know about Pfizer. What about Johnson & Johnson? What about Moderna? What about Astra vinegar, whatever? This is going to affect the people for the long haul. We need to know the facts. We need to fight this. It needs to be class action upon class action. Everyone involved, from Anthony Fauci to Joe Biden to the media who was involved in coercing, just like we were into coercing the people to take this jab, just like we have been on it from the beginning with little to no resources, surely the governments of the earth knew. But it was a plan for population extermination, economic takeover. But those wicked will not get away with what they've done. As it tells us in the Quran, the devil plans and the Lord plans, and the Lord is the best of planners. Please believe. So let's hear this clip from Dr. Meryl Nas. Then we will hear from Dr. Eileen and the Your Money Project.
Next, I would like to welcome the next presenter, Dr. Meryl Nas. And she's an internist with a special interest in vaccine-induced illnesses, including chronic fatigue. She's worked with Gulf War Syndrome, fibromyalgia, toxicology, and she's also a biological warfare epidemiologist, and she's played a key role in helping veterans, for instance, who have suffered via the anthrax vaccine program. So I'd like to welcome right now Dr. Nas, and hopefully she'll be able to tell us. She's done a lot of work regarding the FDA, the CDC, and working to communicate with these agencies through her investigation. She's a unique combination of an investigator, and she is also a physician as well, so she's well placed to get to the bottom of some of these issues. But welcome, Dr. Meryl Nas.
Thank you, Pat. So I have a PowerPoint. Is that coming up?
Yes, indeed.
Thanks. I'm going to use the example of myocarditis to show how the federal agencies that are supposed to be helping the public health are hiding information from us. And if we had this information, we would not be in the situation we find ourselves. I mean, it's so clear, at least to me, that the vaccines are dangerous, but we are not able to see the evidence. So the best thing these federal agencies could have done would be to have not collected information, not done surveillance. But unfortunately, they told us they were going to do the best surveillance ever. They're going to collect more data than had ever been done before to show us the safety of these COVID vaccines. And 1 year ago today, there was a meeting, and this was at the FDA. This woman was the head of vaccines at CDC at the time, and she listed all these different databases. Every one of these icons is a different database that CDC said they were going to be using to evaluate safety of COVID vaccines. Be Safe was a new thing that was, are you seeing the, I'm sorry, we're on the third slide.
Okay, yes, we're here.
Okay. VSafe was set up as a cell phone app, and many people were asked to put it on their phones. What VSafe showed us in the first month of the vaccination program was that about 1 to 3% of people who were vaccinated required a visit to a doctor or to an emergency room afterward. We've not really heard much from VSafe since then. VAERS, of course, is the one database in the United States that must be made public. This was enshrined in the 1986 Childhood Injury Act. And so people do have access to VAERS, but the CDC and FDA have very surprisingly been ignoring the incredible amount of data in that vaccine adverse event reporting system, which they jointly run, which has showed us that there are more deaths reported to VAERS now for these COVID vaccines in 10 months than have ever been reported for all vaccines in the United States over 30 years. So cumulative deaths to this system did not add up to the deaths reported related to COVID vaccines in 2021. apparently it looks like these three databases are underneath VAERS are being pushed into the VAERS system, but we don't know that for sure. They don't explain it. To the right, in this blue box, there are databases that CDC said it didn't have online at the beginning of the program, but it would be bringing in. And by now, they should all have been brought in. So the VSD is supposedly an active surveillance system database comprised of about the medical records of 12 million Americans who belong to several HMOs. The Genesis database comes from a nursing home company that has contracts with about 250 nursing homes in the United States and would be ideal for looking at post-vaccination deaths. Of course, we've heard nothing about that. The VA electronic health record and data warehouse also has information on about 2.3% of Americans who are veterans, and we hear very little about that. Actually, we just got a very useful study done by VA scientists, but not by CDC or FDA, regarding vaccine efficacy, and they showed that the vaccine efficacy overall was less than 50% by September. These three data systems that are supposed to belong to the FDA, the first one is federal partners, whatever that means. The second is their BEST system, which is a collection I'll show you in a sec. And the third is PRISM, and we hear nothing about PRISM and very little from BEST. DOD, Defense Medical Surveillance System database, was set up after the Gulf War and was supposed to make public its data. It's a potentially very rich database. Everyone in the military is in it. Every medical visit to a military hospital or a clinic, every vaccine, every deployment is in this database. We never see it. Next slide. FDA has its own different surveillance system it claims to be using for these vaccines. All of these comprise the BEST system. They were all brought online this year. Again, we get very, very little information, if any, from these. We don't know how they are analyzed. We don't know what the quality of the information is. We don't know actually what information these systems contain. Next slide is the working list, or is it failures to collect?
This is the working list.
Thanks. Okay, so in June, the FDA said these were the diagnoses that it particularly was trying to study. And of course, we're very interested in them. We want to know about myocarditis, thromboses, Guillain-Barré, Bell's palsy, et cetera. Of course, we hear pulmonary emboli, which Steve Kirsch has shown is occurring at something like 100 times the normal rate of reporting in VAERS. But we hear very little. And these are the ones they're focused on. Next slide. In the vaccine trials, the manufacturers made certain not to collect the most useful information, which was regarding the long-term side effects in people and the more serious side effects. They focused, got a lot of detail about the short-term temporary side effects. They in their reports to the FDA, and FDA, of course, is complicit in all this. They can't do anything unless the FDA approves it. They identified adverse reactions by organ system instead of diagnosis, so you couldn't tell the difference between a headache and a paralysis. And then the manufacturers offered vaccine to all of the members in the control groups at 2 months, and a median of 2 months after they were fully vaccinated, which obscured the long-term data and has completely ruined the collection of safety data. Next slide. They couldn't hide myocarditis. They've hidden almost all the other side effects from the public. But myocarditis, and it was first identified in the United States by a scientist at Oracle who told the U.S. federal agencies about it, and they kept quiet. But then Israel, the word got out in Israel. It was on TV. There was a lot of discussion. It was in the newspapers. And slowly the story of myocarditis slipped across the ocean, came to the United States, and 2 months after it was first reported in Israel, The FDA and CDC were having meetings about it. CDC called a special emergency meeting in June 19th, to discuss this new problem of myocarditis that they'd known about for months. And then they canceled the meeting because there was a new holiday called Juneteenth in the United States. Then they had a meeting later and sort of downplayed it. The reason they couldn't hide this, because it occurs almost always within 4 days of a shot and sometimes on the same day. Usually the second shot, sometimes, especially in people who've had the illness before, after the first shot, 80% after the second shot. It's most common in teenagers, and we have no idea about how much of this very serious side effect occurs in the 5 to 11-year-olds. We also don't know about subclinical cases, and I'm going to tell you a bit more about that later. Although CDC says that it's a minor condition and 75% of the kids with this condition are completely better at 3 months, it's not that simple. If you have a diagnosed case, you're not supposed to get any exercise. Probably many sudden deaths are caused by arrhythmias due to myocarditis. And certainly in the pre-COVID era, a lot of people who developed viral myocarditis did require heart transplants or had a significant decrease in their capacity to pump blood. Next slide. This is data from VAERS, and if you look at the one week after the second shot, you'll find that in the first 2 million 12 to 17-year-old males who were vaccinated, the observed number of cases was 128 when they only expected between 0 and 4. So the effect size was so great they could not hide it. And if you graph the cases, you will see, and these are VAERS reports, per million people who were vaccinated, you'll see that the younger you are, the more likely you are to report, to have a case of myocarditis reported to VAERS. And the reporting rate is over 100 times higher in the 12 to 17-year-olds as in the over 50s. Next slide. Now, this is CDC's analysis of the VSD, the Vaccine Safety Data Link, their HMO database of 12 million people. And they had a look at this in June. Of course, remember, they had only started vaccinating kids under 16 4 weeks earlier. And looky here, no signal. They didn't think the incidence of myocarditis was any higher than what happened without vaccination. Now, how did they do that? Well, one way was they threw all the age groups together. The second thing they did was to throw both genders together. And the third thing they did that we know about was they used various mathematical adjustments, but they don't tell us what they are. And those adjustments most likely reduced the risk further. No matter what they looked for, whether they looked for heart attacks, appendicitis, Bell's palsy, blood clots, Guillain-Barré, they couldn't find anything, absolutely nothing. Now, we know that's ridiculous. We know myocarditis is happening, you know, 25 or 50 times more often in young males than expected in the window of time after vaccination. And we know a lot of these other things are happening more commonly. So there is something wrong either with the data itself or with the analysis or perhaps both. And yet CDC presents this as if it's science. Now, this is an interesting paper that is just coming out. It's been accepted for publication in Clinical Infectious Diseases in Oxford Journal. It's from Hong Kong. In Hong Kong, they looked at myocarditis cases in boys aged 12 to 17 who had been vaccinated and found one in 2,700 boys had a clinical case of myocarditis after the second shot. So in the graph I showed you before, VAERS reports, the reports were as frequent as one in 18,000, but here you can see more than six times greater when you start really looking for cases. Now, let me jump to some science that was done on myocarditis after smallpox vaccine. So normally, when you're performing active surveillance, you're still just waiting for cases to show up in a database. You're looking, hopefully, at all medical visits, but you're not actually going after people who got the vaccine and testing them in any way for the diagnosis. In this case, the military, knowing that smallpox vaccine could cause myocarditis and knowing there was a prior report in military recruits from Finland showing there were EKG changes in 1 in 30 recruits after they got a smallpox vaccine, the U.S. at Walter Reed did a study. They had over 1,000 soldiers, men and women. They gave them smallpox vaccine and they drew blood on them before and after to see whether cardiac enzymes were elevated. And they found more than 200 times higher than expected myocarditis. So when they actually looked at these people, they found they had 1 in 220 had an actual case of myocarditis. They had blood that changed. They had chest pain. They had other signs of myocarditis. Clear case. So not 1 in 2,700, not 1 in 18,000, but 1 in 220. And when they looked for subclinical cases, these were the ones without chest pain, but with elevation of cardiac enzymes to at least twice the upper limit of normal from a normal beforehand, they found 1 in 30 of the soldiers, 1 in 30 had evidence of cardiac damage. Now, this is smallpox vaccine. The study hasn't been done for COVID. But we may see something similar. All right. Here is another method for analyzing good data to make sure you don't find anything. This method is called PRR, or proportional reporting rate. It's an algorithm that can be used to compare two vaccines to each other. It has no business being used to identify whether there's a problem in one vaccine the way it's being used today. In January of this year, the CDC published a little pamphlet, which it was not circulating, and it said, we're going to use this algorithm, this equation, to evaluate the safety of COVID vaccines. And by so doing, you are comparing the relative rate of a particular reaction, let's say myocarditis. So let's say that there are 1,000 reports of myocarditis to bears, and there's a total 10,000 reports for COVID vaccine of all adverse effects. And you're comparing that to another vaccine for which there's only 10 reports to bears, and one of them was for myocarditis. If you use this equation, the two vaccines look identical, and you do not see a safety signal for the first vaccine for which there were 1,000 reports of myocarditis. I want to emphasize, read the Substack article by Matthew Crawford that I have at the bottom of this slide. It's a very fascinating, very important article, and I think it could help the lawyers prosecute cases on the basis of this basically fake science that is being used. Next slide. The audacity, shamelessness, and deliberate confusion that is being sowed by government officials has slowed us activists down for far too long. What do we need to do to smoke them out and take them to task? Do we really have to unearth every single dirty trick that they use? Haven't we identified enough already? Surely a pattern of malfeasance can be established. How can the lawyers, doctors, and scientists strategize together to identify potentially winning legal methods to approach what is clearly malfeasance? Thank you very much.
Thank you very much. One thing I wanted to ask you, Dr. Nass, while we're here, the emergency use authorization, this has kind of become a mechanism for a number of things. One of them is to potentially shield the manufacturers from liability under this auspices of a crisis or an emergency use authorization. So is this, are we seeing a coordinated strategy between the use of the emergency use authorization and, let's say, also the demonization in the media of various ways to treat COVID, early treatment, and so forth? And it's created this kind of shield or a wall that really gives complete impunity within that domain of whatever range of, you could say, experimental vaccines under this emergency use authorization. But it seems to be a coordinated mechanism.
Yes. So I don't know how things work in Europe, but in the United States, as long as you are dealing with a product under EUA, nobody can get sued. So those products could be ventilators, they could be drugs and vaccines, they could be masks, they could be tests. They all have EUAs. And so the authorities who have been, have been told by federal officials that as long that they are shielded by their work with these products, because no one who develops a program, who manufactures them, who transports them, who owns the building in which you get your vaccine, nobody can basically be sued for anything under the emergency use authorization, which is under the PREP Act. And so I think, for example, local officials who have been vaccinating children down to the age of 12 without parental consent, which is against the law in most of the states in which this is going on, have probably been told because they're using an EUA vaccine, they are shielded. However, there is malfeasance, right? They know it's against the state law. And the bar to suing under the PREP Act is you have to prove willful misconduct. You have to prove that people knew ahead of time that what they were doing was wrong, that they were shipping out a bad vaccine or they were vaccinating kids against the law or something. But I think, and you have to, it's very complicated. You have to get the approval of the Secretary of HHS, which is, you know, obviously on its face, very unlikely. But I think to show another judge that the bar is so great that it can never be met means that that the PREP Act does not meet the standard. It doesn't give people due process. It denies them other rights. And so I think, I'm not a lawyer, but maybe we can go after all this on the basis that there is no remedy, given this massive liability protection.
Yes, that's a key point that's holding this crisis together, it seems, and creating a lot of work for people like you and your colleagues as well. But thank you very much, Dr. Merrill Nass.
Black Power, that was Dr. Merrill Nass. We are still waiting for your amended project to load. So what we shall play again is the original Dr. Eileen, in which he initially broke down what was taking place with the COVID vaccine. We want to make sure that we are given as much information so that you can be not only informed, but that you can inform your people and anyone that you know and love as to what is taking place with the vaccine, the adverse effects, and also giving you a historical perspective as to where this virus initially came from, how this is indeed a pandemic, a crime against humanity. So what I'm going to do, I believe this is the right clip. We've had so many clips that says Dr. Eileen, but I believe this is the right clip, so bear with me. Let's go ahead and play this right here.
Attention prayer.
No, that's not the right clip. Yay. I'll tell you what I'm going to do while we're trying to get the right clip loaded up. I do have some information that we want to make sure that you brothers and sisters are aware of. First of all, the Your Immunity Project does conference calls every Tuesday. You can go to Your Immunity Project on Facebook to the page Your Immunity Project, and on that page you will see the Zoom link every Tuesday at 6 p.m. Central, which would be 7 p.m. Eastern. That's 6 p.m. Central, 7 p.m. Eastern. So what I want to do, I want to continue. Well, I'm trying to find this clip from Dr. Arlene. I want to continue to give you factual information from other doctors and scientists in regards to the adverse reactions that people are experiencing from the deadly COVID shot. And this is, wow, this is so so much information. It's like damn near like an information overload. We don't only want to deal with the adverse reactions. We just played Dr. Meryl Noss. I don't want to repeat the other testimony that we already had. I got so many clips that say Dr. Aleem. I thought that was the one that I just played. Our system is slowly uploading the Your Immunity Project from yesterday. So we had no idea it would take this long. I truly thought that we would have information already up for you. So what we're going to do, I'm going to play, I'm going to play a clip from, I want to play this, man, I'm looking for the original Your Immunity Project clip, which Dr. Aline first came out with, not the Your Immunity Project, but the original clip when Dr. Aline came out and explained what the virus was. So, without any, that would have been 2020, so many clips. I tell you what, I'm going to play a quick clip in which the brother, Dr. Lane, was going over the dangers of vaccines, period, while I find these other clips, Black Power.
Now, we want to cover the subject of the relationship between vaccines and human reproduction, since that was one of Yaqub's objectives on the island of Patmos in the making of the Caucasian people and the brown and yellow races. And since it's the aim of the synagogue of Satan following his pattern to control human reproduction, we want to address that. But before doing that, we want to set the stage with this short clip from a discussion that I had with Dr. Abdul Aleem Muhammad in 2009. Please watch this.
And it's no wonder that we have the who now also. I mean, all the hands seem to be the same hand.
Yeah. And see, that issue of vaccine contamination is the number one reason that in 1997, I issued, as the Minister of Health and Human Services for the Nation of Islam, a moratorium on vaccines. It wasn't that I had a problem with the validity of the theory of vaccination. I think I have more concern about that now than I did at that time. But it was really the simple issue of contamination.
Right.
That even if vaccines are good, in theory, they certainly are not good if they're contaminated.
Right, right.
And all vaccines that I know about that are administered in the United States of America are contaminated. And, of course, the original contaminating virus that appeared in the polio vaccine going back to the late 50s and into the 60s and to 2009. The polio vaccine administered in 2009 is still contaminated with the SV40 virus, simian virus number 40, properly known as the polyoma virus. And poly means many, oma means tumors or cancer. So the polyoma virus was actually the first virus that was discovered that could actually cause cancer.
Right, and this is why, I mean, some people attribute the rise in cancer to that virus.
Absolutely. You see, that's why in the 1950s, a woman's chances of getting breast cancer may have been less than 1 in 10, and a man's chance of getting prostate cancer was even less than that. But now, and then by the time I was in medical school, you see, in 1975, the risk of breast cancer was 1 in 6 or 1 in 7. And now it's 1 in 3.
Wow.
And every time that that tumor that appears in the breast in a woman or in the prostate in a man has been studied for the presence of SV40, there that cancer virus is.
Right.
It doesn't cause cancer right away. It causes cancer 30, 40, and 50 years after the injection. So almost no one is able to connect the dots, you see. But and now, just as recently as 10 years ago or so, when my schoolmate, Dr. David Satcher, he was in D.C., so I invited him to come by the clinic because I wanted to talk to him about vaccines.
Now he was the head of the CDC.
At that time, he was the head of the CDC, later became the Surgeon General.
Yes, sir.
So at that time, he was the head of the CDC, and he was mounting a strong campaign to see that all Americans received all of their vaccines. And so I asked him about SV40. And he was the one that informed me of what I didn't know. I didn't know that it was still in the vaccines.
Oh.
I thought that when they had discovered it in the 60s that they took steps to remove it. He said, no, it's still there.
Man.
It's still there. And then he poo-pooed the risk, saying that it wasn't worth doing anything about. And then I asked him about, well, what about the epidemic in cancer that we're experiencing in this country? And, you know, I don't quite remember what his, but he didn't see that there was a connection. But I think there is.
Well, you know, a lot of people have written about that. They didn't see cancer till vaccines became, you know, widespread. But getting back to the 1997 moratorium, because I remember that I was, you know, with you working here and there in the clinic during your campaign against vaccination. That moratorium has not been lifted.
No, it hasn't. Now, just to put give the historical context.
Please.
I issued a moratorium, and my understanding is a moratorium is sort of like a temporary measure.
Right.
And the idea was we would have a moratorium on vaccines until such time as we could convene a conference of experts. So I contacted the National Medical Association, the CDC, the AMA, and other official medical bodies around the country, and we were going to convene a vaccine conference in Chicago in that summer.
Right, right.
And then for one reason or another, that conference actually never materialized. And so we never had that convening. Because at that time, I was aware of the contamination issue, but I didn't know how far it went. And I was sort of sitting on the fence. You see, I didn't want to be rash or premature in my judgment.
Right. Right.
But that conference never took place to fully air the issue so that we could then develop a definitive policy.
Right.
But now, I guess the moratorium has become policy. And I would say that everything that I've learned since then convinces me even more the rightness of that moratorium against vaccines.
Yes, sir. Well, you were divinely guided, and I'm glad you said that, because even today, you know, among the believing community of the Nation of Islam, of course, we serve our people, which is a larger group, but just dealing with among us, you know, we do still have some who are not really aware of the dangers of vaccines, and particularly now in this day and time with all of the genetic engineering, the secrecy, the money involved, and maybe other diabolical aims, it even makes that moratorium even more, you know, for us to follow today.
Yeah, now at that time, just let me maybe just to complete the story, one of the people that I consulted was Dr. John Martin. And Dr. Martin had been in charge of vaccine safety for the FDA. I mean, that he was the chief of vaccine safety. So here's a guy, he's a PhD, MD, you know, and what he found out as the head of vaccine safety is he didn't have any teeth.
Oh, okay.
He didn't have any administrative force and power. He could not even compel the pharmaceutical companies who were making these vaccines to tell him what was in the vaccine.
Ain't that so?
They had it written such that that kind of information was considered proprietary information, that the pharmaceutical companies only had to divulge voluntarily, if at all.
Right.
And so every year he would send out these long report forms, and they would come back almost blank because they didn't have to fill in anything.
And that still is in effect today.
Yeah. So basically he was in a position of having to take their word that there was no contamination in the vaccines. Then he told me the reason why he quit. He said because even with all of that lax regulation, occasionally they would discover a batch of vaccines that were contaminated. Mm-hmm. And he said, now what do you think we would do with it? I thought, I would hope that you would destroy them. He said, oh no. He said, there's too much money involved. Mm-hmm. So all we could do was return that batch to the pharmaceutical company. They would change the labels and send it overseas because there was no law against sending contaminated vaccines overseas, usually to poor countries in Africa and other parts of the world.
Wow. I mean, this sheds, even a great light. The fact that you talked to the guy who was supposed to be in charge of safety, you know, but how can you do your duty if nobody's even telling you what's in it?
Now, he has a website. I don't know if it's still, I haven't visited in a long time, but if anybody cares to check it out, it's called stealthviruses.com.
Stealthviruses.com.
Because he started a whole line of research. And I asked him, what do you mean stealth viruses? Well, he said, well, how do you detect viruses? You know, they're stealthy.
Right.
And if you don't already know that it exists, how would you detect it? So if somebody comes up with a novel virus or one just develops in nature, how would you even know?
Mm-hmm.
So he had a website that was developed for the purpose.
Infertility is considered a crisis in the United States and Europe in particular. Both men and women suffer from the inability to produce children.
All right, Black Power. So that was the clip on vaccines, period. Now, I did finally find the right audio from Dr. Aileen. When the virus first came out, we became aware of the virus, that is, in 2020, where he explained what the virus was and the origin. We've been on top of this from the beginning. Remember, this is why our broadcast went from being on every Monday night to nightly, because we wanted to make sure, and we have been making sure, to constantly bring you the people, the truth about what is taking place. Here's Dr. Aileen.
Okay, coronavirus. Everybody's talking about coronavirus. Well, viruses come in families. So there's a herpes family. There's a coronavirus family. There's an influenza family of viruses. And so coronaviruses are generally considered to be animal viruses. When you look a little deeper, you find coronaviruses inhabit parasites that are in the bodies of animals. So therefore, in livestock industries, they have a big coronavirus problem because you can get things like feedlot fever among cattle, sheep, but especially pigs and other domestic animals that are not necessarily so clean. So that's a big problem. Coronaviruses infect animals. Sometimes you may get a human infection with coronavirus. That's somewhat rare. Some of the common colds that people have had are due to coronaviruses. Generally speaking, they have not proven to be extremely fatal. However, what we're dealing with now, the novel coronavirus, COVID-20, this is not a natural coronavirus. This is a genetically engineered, weaponized version of coronavirus that has been married to 4 genes from HIV and probably other genes from perhaps other viral pathogens. The short history is Dr. Lieber of Harvard University, the chief biomolecular scientist at Harvard University, dug up some frozen bodies from the tundra in Alaska. This was maybe 3 or 4 years ago, to investigate what killed them during the Spanish flu epidemic. He isolated that virus from 100 years ago and resurrected it, you could say, but found out that because of the frozen conditions over time, the virus had lost its infectivity. You may question, why would somebody dig up a virus that killed over 100 million people and brought an end to World War I? Well, you would have to ask Dr. Lieber that. But he did that, and then when the infectivity was not what he wanted, then he paired it with 4 genes from HIV and perhaps some other things. And now you have a highly contagious coronavirus that is infecting human beings. And not only from animal to human transmission, but now verified cases, human to human transmission through the air. So you could say that this coronavirus 2020 is the descendant of the MERS virus, the Middle Eastern respiratory virus that killed many people in the Middle East, and the SARS virus that I think that goes back to 2003-2004 that killed many, many people. Now, the SARS virus was the first indication to the Chinese people that someone was out to get them. The SARS virus was genetically engineered to infect Asian people, preferably. And the Chinese realized this. And so since that time, they have actually been on the defensive. Now, the question is whether this latest virus is also a bioweapon engineered to destroy people of Asian descent. And it seems to have another feature. It seems to preferentially infect men as opposed to women. Seems to be much more lethal in men than women. And even though it's considered to be a respiratory virus that causes a respiratory illness, the other interesting factor is that it seems to have a predilection for male testicles. And even in those that recover, the question is, will they be sterilized as after this COVID infection, even if they survive? Bill Gates, along with Dr. Lieber and Johns Hopkins University in October of 2019, conducted a simulation, computer simulation, of a coronavirus outbreak, and they determined through computer simulations that such an outbreak would lead to the death of 65 million people. Now, the current experience in China with a 2.3% mortality rate shows that globally we could expect at least 165 million deaths from this virus. So what is it all for? I think it's for the purpose of slowing down the growth of China as a dominant economic, political, and economic power in the world. That is, of course, if it really is a bioweapon. If it's not really a bioweapon, it certainly has taken the U.S.-China trade war to another level. Trade war has become biological warfare, and people are being targeted with their lives. Part of the trade war, of course, was the controversy with a company called Huawei, the leaders in 5G technology. The center of 5G technology is China, and the center of 5G technology in China is Wuhan City, or Hubei, in Hubei province. And when they turned on or switched on the most potent 5G network in the world, in Wuhan City, that's when the epidemic broke out. So there are scientists who think that there is an electronic component to what would otherwise just be a biological phenomenon. A virus is on the borderline of living things versus non-living things. It is protein wrapped around genetic material, either RNA or DNA. It is susceptible to electronic frequencies. Viruses can be activated by 5G 60 cycle frequency radiation that was turned on in Wuhan City and just coincidentally happened at the same time as a viral outbreak. Could there be a connection? One final point that I think the world should consider. From my point of view as a medical doctor, someone who knows a little bit about public health, I don't think that the Chinese government could be faulted in any way for their response to whatever happened, whether it was a natural phenomenon or whether it turns out to really be a bio attack. But their response to it was heroic and correct. They built 3 1,000-bed hospitals in a little more than a week. That is phenomenal. They provided hospital care for thousands of people who otherwise would have been left out in the cold to die. And so this is something to ponder. Is the United States capable of the same response, public health-wise? Is Europe capable of the same response? Is Africa, is India, are the other nations, are Brazil and other nations in South America and throughout the world? Is Japan, Korea, are they capable of the same heroic, monumental public health measures undertaken by the Chinese, who seem, I mean, optimistically I'm speaking now, they seem to have contained the spread of the virus in China through these drastic means. But suppose you had the same level of infection in New York City or Los Angeles or Chicago or some other major city in Europe, as we now see in Italy and Spain and Germany, cases breaking out. Well, this is the tip of the iceberg. 80-some cases now in Long Island, New York, in Los Angeles, in Texas, and other places. People under quarantine. We don't know how many people are really infected because the CDC has only given a little more than 400 tests total. So if they're reporting 50 or 60 cases, that sounds like a small number, and it is, but you'd only tested 400 people. So how can you be sure about the total number of infections in the country? You can't be. So all precautions must be in order. Facial masks are not going too far. Frequent hand washing is not going too far. Avoiding contact with public surfaces is not going too far. Avoiding public gatherings is not going too far. We don't actually know the full characteristics of what we're dealing with, but we must take those things into consideration that we are learning, you know, where these outbreaks are taking place throughout the world. A weak Clorox solution, a cap full of Clorox in a gallon of water, can be used as a disinfectant on surfaces. I use essential oils mixed in water, things like geranium and other essential oils, eucalyptus, camphor, these essential oils mixed in water, sprayed in a house will keep germs at bay. These are old-fashioned, traditional methods. I think the public health service in America is so decrepit and disabled that every American citizen should consider you're on your own. And you have to do what you can do to protect yourself and your family because I don't think that the government agencies are going to be able. They're not equipped. The hospitals don't have the space to accommodate you. So you're going to have to accommodate. So the question yourself. About whether or not this COVID-20, the coronavirus, is natural or man-made, I think that the fact that it is man-made is beyond question right now. I think the genetic sequences that have been done throughout the world shows that it did not have a natural origin. You can't naturally combine HIV genes with coronavirus genes. That just doesn't happen in nature. However, nature is capable of things that we may not be able to conceive of. So for example, one of the things that people are becoming aware of are the tremendous number of deaths that take place every year from ordinary influenza. In the United States, for example, every year you will have between 30 and 40,000 deaths from regular influenza, and that's considered to be normal. And it could even range higher than that, 60, 70,000 per year, and some years lower than that. So we have good seasons and bad seasons. This is from influenza. Well, where did the influenza virus come from? I'm using this as an example for all viruses. Where did they come from? Well, if you have as you do in China, a situation where you have population congestion, you have human beings living in close proximity with animals. You have human beings living in close proximity to pigs and ducks and chickens. And so the history of influenza is that this is a virus that naturally recombined to produce something that can cause human disease. A bird virus infects a duck in a pond in China. That bird virus gets picked up by a pig who drinks from that pond water. And then that virus recombines inside the body of the pig so that it begins to infect the pig. A bird virus, in other words, has now jumped into a pig. And then who lives right next to the pig or who ends up eating the pig or slaughtering the pig is a human being. And so now an original bird virus that somehow was able to infect a pig now makes a second leap, species leap, you could say, into a human being. And now a bird virus that became a swine virus is now a human virus, and we call it influenza. And it has been plaguing the world ever since people thought it was a good idea to live in close proximity to a food source like ducks and pigs. So it's possible, it's remotely possible, that this novel coronavirus is a natural virus, like they say. It came from a meat market in China. It came from bats. It came from this. It came from that. Well, that sounds like the green monkey story related to HIV. And then it turns out green monkeys had very little to do with HIV. Human biomolecular engineers had everything to do with the development of HIV as a biological weapon. And I think that the evidence is very strong right now. And I think the proof positive will come in the future. This was a biologically engineered weapon, probably done by Dr. Lieber and his team from Harvard University in conjunction with Johns Hopkins University and with Wuhan University in China and other government agencies in China. They developed this. They will have to explain to the world why they thought this was such a good idea to do.
So Black Power. Now, of course, that was at the beginning of the COVID, and many of the things that Dr. Eileen had suspicions of panned out to be true. It is indeed a biological weapon. It was a coordinated coercionary effort, and all the facts are coming out. Now, here is the deal. We have been attempting to upload the Your Immunity Project from yesterday onto the server to play on tonight. But it's creeping along, but it's coming along nonetheless. So what we will probably and most likely do is play it on tomorrow. But what we will do for tonight, and we still may play it tonight, you know, depends on how long it takes to get on, and then we will replay it on tomorrow or maybe on Friday. But what we are doing right now is we're giving you historical as to how we received and have been on top of receiving all of our updates as what's been going on from Dr. Eileen and the Your Immunity Project, because he's been writing exact from the beginning. That audio that we played, He did a video like within days of the pandemic hitting, and you can tell because the numbers that he said in the beginning, you know, they were saying it was like less than 400 reporting. Now we known since then, we found out since then, you know, how many people have been affected. You know, millions of people have been affected. It has been since then proven over and over that this was indeed a biological weapon concocted within the laboratories. We played for the few weeks just past, for days, we played the testimonials from doctors and scientists and virologists and pathologists from around the world that validated the fact that this was a biological weapon in the COVID release, in the crimes against humanity in regards to the treatment or a mistreatment in the hospital protocols in which folks were given remdesivir. It absolutely took their lives and are still taking lives. We've also been able to get testimony to find out that even the PCR tests that people were taking, you know, the COVID tests you pull up to take, they have a 95% false positive. So people were getting told they had COVID when they just had a cold or regular flu and were subjected to treatments, possibly inhumane if they went into the hospital, but trauma. Yes, the COVID is a real weapon, but it did not have a high mortality rate, meaning most, it is a 99.75% chance of survival. Do you understand? Only a 0.25% mortality rate, the actual virus of itself. But the vaccine has a 5% mortality rate that we know of. And as the doctor stated earlier, they're underreporting the actual deaths and vaccine and adverse effects. So that we know of. For hell, all we know, it can be far greater. But the facts are coming out more and more. And we here at the New Black Panther Party have been making sure since the pandemic hit, night after night, we bring you facts. Yes, we're addressing other issues that are taking place, like injustice, reparations. But this warfare that is taking place with this COVID and the jabs is taking a heavy toll on the planet. People are dying. People are getting misinformation. There's been a major brain fuck that took place with the media and the coercion, not only with the media, the public and elected officials, the entertainers, the TV shows, the talk shows that pressured you to take the jab, the employers that pressured you. And now that the truth is coming out and the facts are coming out that this is a biological weapon and the vaccines, the so-called vaccines, are not stopping the virus but are causing worse and more illness. And now they want us to all of a sudden say, okay, no mandates, but you've already injected half of the American population. And to make things worse, once they have received the injection, they are now emitting the spike protein. And the spike protein sheds and contaminates people who have not taken the injection for being around those who have. So those who were foolish enough to take the poison, now you contaminated other people. So we've all been affected, whether we like it or not. So what do we do about it? We must continue to take those things to build our immunity. Number one, we have to get the facts. Number two, we have to tell the truth about what's going on. Number three, there's a lot of cognitive dissonance going on, meaning people don't want to accept what's going on. They're in denial because to accept the fact that they took the poison, and some people gave the poison to their children. Some people were coerced into taking the jab by their jobs, and then their jobs fired them and let them go. They're walking around here exposing the spike protein, which is the deadly component, because it knocks off your body's natural immunity and is affecting all the vital organs. It's like a super HIV. So with that being said, I'm going to play yet another clip about these vaccines from Dr. Michael Palmer and Dr. Kathy Austin exposing the mRNA vaccine. It says we have a few more minutes for this Your Immunity Project to upload. We'll make a calculated decision. 10 times out of 10, I'm going to play it tonight. That's in the blog talk a lot of the time. It'll be an extended broadcast. because the show must go on despite these different obstacles. But even with these obstacles, we've used this opportunity to go back to the drawing board to prove that we've been right and exact. That Dr. Aleem and the European Remedy Project has been right and exact. They have been doctors and lawyers across, so you can't say we're being racist. We're even playing cracker law doctors and lawyers, white doctors and lawyers, Chinese doctors and lawyers, doctors, I mean, and scientists, virologists. We've played India. It doesn't matter who has the facts. This is a war. We have to get down to the facts about what's going on. We have to get down to the fact about what's going on. And we have to be able to be intelligent with the facts and information. We have to guard ourselves. This is heavy, but we got to deal with it. I'm going to play another clip while we work on getting your mini project. This is Dr. Palmer, Michael Palmer, and Kathy Austin going even more further into diabolicalness of this vaccine.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to The Last Days. It is a spectacular day in British Columbia. We had a big snowfall dump last night, so you can see the mountains behind me. They're just stunning today. It's absolutely beautiful. In British Columbia, often we have overcast and rain, and even if we have snow, there's no blue sky, so today's a real joy. I'm encouraged that I think we have a couple of guests on that are revealing such truth, and the world is beginning. You know, you can't silence the independent producers out there. You can't silence people that are righteous and want to get the truth out and refuse to be bought or to be scared into silence. And we have two amazing, courageous guests today, and you are going to love them. I opened my dad's Bible. My dad passed away in the last month and a half or so, and I love just reading his Bible to see what he thought was important. And today, it landed on Matthew 5, verse 6, where he's underlined, "Blessed are they who hunger and thirst after righteousness, for they shall be filled." My dad, he was not a perfect man, but he hungered for something, and that was the truth. And that is what I believe he's passed on to me. And I refuse to be a scaredy cat in the face of what we are all dealing with. It is pretty shocking to me that many have compromised. Many are silent on the truth. They are willing to keep their jobs, not sacrifice at this epic hour. Instead, they choose cowardice. And that is happening all over our country. And if we all stood, we actually wouldn't have this problem. If we all stood, if we all hungered for righteousness, then we wouldn't have this problem. Instead, what we have is a compromised society. We have watched the government fall, we've watched our medical establishment fall, and we've watched our churches fall. Saddest part to me, that now churches are asking for vaccine passports. Some are asking for vaccine passports in order to have some time with God. So many of you are deciding to have your time with God at home and tell them to take a flying leap, because that's what they need to do. We have large-scale succumbing to the agenda by well-known ministries who purport to be bearers of the truth, and yet they have fallen. That's been my biggest worry. Why have so many fallen? Why are there so few daring to speak? I was a little surprised, and I think that we're not able to bring it up on the screen here, but Oprah, this is shocking. So she denied her best friend, Gail King. Oh, we've heard about Oprah and Gail for years, right? Okay, so you got it. All right. Oprah brags that Gail King is barred from her home until she meets her COVID standards. So in order to get to Oprah's house, apparently what you have to do, in order to get to Oprah's house, you've got to, well, you've got to be double vaccinated, probably with a booster.
The vaccinated, boosted, tested.
Oh, vaccinated, boosted, tested, and quarantined or whatever. I mean, are people crazy? That's just nuts, you know? Now, some of the things I'm kind of concerned about are the things we're hearing about the shortages on food. And I think that our guests are, we have Dr. Michael Palmer on today and Catherine Austin Fitz. And, you know, the whole tie-in with this agenda and economics is very interesting, but the unvaxxed farmers are being barred from CBH sites. So increasingly, farmers who are... farmers who are in the midst of harvesting their biggest ever crop must have their first vaccine by December 31st to be allowed onto CBH delivery. Our food, I'm getting a lot of information from some of you out there, even some of you reporting that here in Canada, some of the items that are missing on our shelves is a little bit shocking. And so that I find a little bit alarming and disturbing that is happening. We showed you the video yesterday of how the police are being used to go into places and, you know, remove people that don't have their vax passport. Couple things before we get to our guest. Brampton Mayor Patrick Brown's update. So this is a little bit interesting. This is a tweet basically that says that Brampton Mayor Patrick Brown's update is refreshing and provides needed context. 50%
video.
Oh, it is a video? Should we play that? You've got the video? Yeah, let's take a look.
The province. So when I say we only have two in ICU, it speaks to a picture that is dramatically different than what we saw in previous waves. Now, obviously, the vaccination campaign is responsible for much of that success. And I have to note, it's even more positive than it first appears when you look at those COVID numbers. Because when you look at the COVID numbers at Brampton Civic, more than 50% of the COVID patients, so of the 20 COVID-19 patients, half of them went in for COVID. But what is interesting is half of the COVID-19 patients being counted as COVID-19 patients came in for another healthcare issue and inadvertently found out that they had COVID, which speaks to the fact that COVID is so well spread in the community right now. The Omicron variant is everywhere. You know, I had one infectious disease doctor at Osler tell me that the case counts could be five times what we think it is, based on the fact that there is such a degree of community spread. And so when you look at case counts like we're seeing now, that have surpassed case counts the highest case counts that we've seen before, but the hospitalization is so low, the severe cases are so low, that is a positive trend. I know right now in the media there is a lot of negativity and doom and gloom, but when you break down and you look at these numbers in the hospital, you know, there are reasons for cautious optimism that at this point with the Omicron spread, we're not seeing the type of severity that was imagined. I would note though,
okay, so why do we not have that kind of leadership going on here in British Columbia? Because instead of that kind of common sense approach, we were told not to have Christmas and we are told not to celebrate for New Year's. Like we're going to listen, but anyways, we're all going to do exactly what we want to do because we are not complying with stupidity. And the day that we start complying, all of us, with this ridiculous, you know, the continued lockdowns for Omicron, which is a nothing burger. We're all freaking out. Everybody, I've got, you know, people, you know, walking outside with masks on. Has the world gone nuts? I don't know what is happening. There just seems to not be the amount of critical thinking that there needs to be. Finally, somebody's saying something. I want to do this share, and my husband wasn't that thrilled about me showing this because, you know, it looks kind of crazy. But here's the thing. Dr. Louis DiBenito shares an advance of his report on the MAC address address phenomenon in inoculated individuals. Let me tell you what I did this morning and yesterday. I've spent probably 2 hours of my life speaking with people that are from Israel. These are experts from Israel. These are people that have studied it, and they're saying this is absolutely true, that on certain individuals, what's happening, and that you can even with a Samsung phone, that now they're swearing to me that it's true. I like these guys. I'm not going to say it's true. I'm just going to say heads up that it does appear that some people who have had an inoculation, there seems to be a tie-in with a Bluetooth number that has been attached to them. Is it all copacetic, factual? I don't know yet because I haven't done it yet, but apparently people in France have done the exact testing. They have videos of it. I'm going to be investigating that. And I remember early on we saw a couple of videos of people that seemed to indicate that they had some sort of number that was popping up. They walked past something, and it would pop up. All right, well, that's just too way out there for me. So when I begin to see the pieces coming together and these guys in Israel, I believe them. They are ahead of the track. They're trying to get the information out, and it's having a hard time getting out. So is it true? I don't know. Keep an eye out for the fact that some people, and they're saying not all, they don't, because what do we have? I believe that we have a placebo group with this vaccination. I've heard that this is the case. It's hard to get real information, isn't it? If you can't find out the actual ingredients in any of these vaccines without having somebody have to dissect them themselves and put out reports, how do we really know what's going on at all? And so that is a very, very interesting thing to me. The Netherlands is announcing that they plan to give people up to 6 doses of the COVID vaccine. I believe that our Trudeau bought 8 doses of the COVID vaccine. People are beginning to ask the very important questions. How bought into this am I really? I thought I was doing my part by getting, this is what others would say, not me, because I'm not ever doing anything that has to do with taking any part of this vaccine because it has shown itself to be dangerous. The VAERS reports indicate the amount of deaths, so why would I do that, especially since I've already had COVID. I'm completely COVID recovered. I also want to report to you that a very good friend of mine actually asked Dr. Bonnie Henry personally on a phone call, asked her, there are many people that have recovered from COVID. They have the immunity. They have this natural immunity, which she didn't want to call it natural immunity. It's post-COVID, post-infectious
immunity.
And why can't we have the passports into the world, right? Well, she didn't answer that question. And that's because most of these people, they're bought in. There is a buying in either through keeping your paycheck, sharing the narrative. It would be economically unsound to make decisions other than, going along with this agenda. Dr. Bonnie Henry does not want to lose her cushy job. Here's the problem. We are going to be seeing and showing and talking with guests today, which I'd like to get to very quickly. Let's just line up the Dr. Batke quick clip. There are people that are putting forward this initiative, and I believe that a time will come of accountability. I really do. And the more and more information that's getting out, everyone is wisening up. Even the vaccinated are ticked off this Christmas. The vaccinated hockey players, right, that are having to cancel events, the people that have bought in completely and now, oh, no New Year's? Why? Because of the sneeze variant? You might have Omicron. Oh, one of the big, the big things that shows you have Omicron is you sneeze. I sneezed right before the before we started shooting here. Maybe I have Omicron. Now we're canceling things. Now we're ticking off the vaccinated. Woo-hoo! Us unvaccinated, maybe we're the easy group, but now you've ticked off the vaccinated, and it's going to get really bad for you. So my next guest, the guest that we're going to speak to today, one of them has spent many years actually working with this gentleman, and Dr. Sukrit Bakhti, and I want to show you a quick clip of something we're going to be talking about today. He interviewed a fellow who had basically done autopsies on people that had been vaccinated. It's fascinating. Take a look.
The facts are on the table, and the facts have been presented by Arne Burkhardt a week ago, and the facts are damning. All gene-based vaccines, independent of manufacturers, produce the same result in the vaccinees. He has looked at 15 in the last 4 days. The number has been increased to 70 individuals who died after vaccination without any connection to vaccination being established by the authorities. So these were people who died at home, at work, in the car, doing their sports, etc., etc., etc. This is very, very important. Postmortems were performed because the relatives insisted on this, and nothing was found. So the organs appeared normal. However, when Arne Burkhardt, professor of pathology, one of the most experienced professors in Germany, who is now pensioned, by the way, like me, proceeded to look at these organs over the last 6 months, he has spent day after day looking at these organs. He discovered something that was so absolutely damning and absolutely, you know, there's no question now anymore about what is going on, and the answer is in the organs of these people. In 90%, he found clear evidence for autoimmune self-attack by killer lymphocytes on the tissues. The main ones being the heart, the lung, and after that, other tissues such as liver, etc., etc., etc. And this has been now posted on the website of the Doctors for COVID Ethics and is going viral around the world because these data are so damning that you don't have to start looking for other data to know that these vaccines are killing the young and the old.
Okay, my guest today, Dr. Michael Palmer, is from Germany, and you'll be able to tell that with his wonderful accent. He is an MD who worked with Dr. Bakhti for 10 years and got his board certification in medical microbiology. Since 2001, he has been at the University of Waterloo working in biochemistry, and he has had a tremendous amount of experience in dealing with all of these issues surrounding what is going on with the vaccines and what is happening. So we'll be speaking with him. Catherine Austin Fitz is an American investment banker and former public official who served as managing director of Dillon, Reed & Co. and during the presidency of George H.W. Bush as United States Assistant Secretary of Housing and Urban Development for Housing, she has widely written and commented on the subject of public spending and has alleged several large-scale instances of government fraud. And boy, do we need people who are going to tell the truth on all of these issues. So Dr. Michael Palmer, thank you very much for being here. I understand from your bio that you have worked then with Dr. Bakhti, and that must have been quite an experience. He is really putting out some amazing information right now.
Yes, Dr. Bakhti is one of the most brilliant people I've ever met. I actually met him as a student, so he taught me immunology, and I liked him so much that I asked for a chance to work with him. And then I worked with him between 1990 and 2000 in his Institute of Medical Microbiology in Mainz, Germany.
I am so grateful for you being here. You are speaking out. You have decided to be one of the courageous people that will not be silent in the face of some of the things that are going on, that all of us are uneasy about. And you have taken your expertise and you've begun to dialogue, speaking to crowds, speaking to people about what is truly happening. What is the most worrisome thing that you are seeing happening, and why have you decided that you need to be speaking at a time when many are silent?
Well, maybe the last question first. I mean, the reason I got into science is because I am very interested in finding out the truth about things. And so that's what I simply have tried to do throughout my life, and that's what I'm continuing to do, regardless of the political surroundings. You know, I'm just simply trying to understand and to speak the truth as I see it. That's simple.
I appreciate that. I appreciate that very much. Can I ask, before you get into some presentation that you have, when did you begin? You know, we all January 2020, even a bit before, we began to hear about COVID and all of that. What was the point when you went, something else is going on here, and you began seeing things that were alarming to you?
Well, I mean, the first thing that struck me as odd was the idea of locking up healthy people. That never made sense to me, or testing people that have no symptoms. That never made sense, regardless of whether or not the pathogen in question is dangerous or not. As long as they don't have symptoms, there's very little reason to either test or lock them up. Another point, a turning point for me, was that I asked my daughter, she's actually a pediatrician in Germany, and works at a hospital that takes in the sick from a population of 180,000 people. And at the at peak COVID in spring 2020, I asked her, how many COVID patients do you have in your hospital? She said, 7, out of a population of 180,000, right? And I asked, how many in ICU? 1. And then said, how many dead? 0. And it simply actually went down from there, right? So that was the peak, 7 patients, and that hospital was the peak. And there was never, throughout 2020, at least a single fatality due to COVID in this hospital. So when I heard about these numbers, it was very clear to me that obviously we are fed a big pile of bullshit by the media and by the politicians.
100%. If I could just say hello to Catherine Austin Fitz right now, just to welcome her on so everybody knows she's there. We've got her on by telephone because of where she is in the world right now. Catherine, could I ask you the same thing? You've been, you are no stranger to what goes on with governments and some of the, as you say, government fraud that can take place. When did you begin to suspect something else is happening with this whole COVID agenda in your line of work and field of expertise?
So I've been tracking what I call the financial coup d'etat for the last 20 years. And what I've been warning people is that when the retirement started to occur of the baby boomers, that the leadership would have to do something to cover up the fact that they had literally engineered a financial coup and taken a great deal of the money for the retirement savings. So I was expecting what we call the going direct reset. I was expecting for the central banks to re-engineer the financial system. The thing that makes COVID particularly dangerous, you can see by looking at the vaccine passports. What they're trying to do is put into place a control grid that will literally end democracy and liberty and freedom in the West forever. And it's, you know, those who liken it to the Chinese social credit system, it's that, but it's much worse. And I think it's very difficult for most Americans to understand what is contemplated here and the complete end of all the freedoms they've known all their lives. So to me, we're at a fork in the road, and one fork leads to freedom and the other leads to slavery. I'm a Christian. I would rather be dead than be a slave. So to me, every person who understands what's happening, whether from the medical point of view or the financial point of view, has to speak up and say stop, because we are literally at a crossroads where we could lose everything.
That is so true, and that's why I'm so grateful for the both of you. And it all ties in, as we're going to see, that it, you know, we have a medical expert such as Dr. Palmer and somebody who studied finance, and it's amazing how they are intertwined. So, Dr. Palmer, if you could tell us, basically, what are you sounding the alarm about? What is crucial to you to share?
Well, I mean, what I'm trying to do, going to try to do today, is provide an update and actually some explanations, some detail on what Professor Bhakti already spoke about in the clip that you played. I want to just show the evidence that Professor Burkhardt has shared. That's actually the key point of the presentation I have prepared. In principle, the vaccination is, right, I have been repeating these three points. Vaccination has never been necessary. It was clear from the beginning that the virus didn't even merit a vaccine, because it simply doesn't have the kill rate that is that you would expect from a proper virus against which you want to vaccinate. Then secondly, the vaccines don't work. That was actually clear from the very beginning, that all these efficacy data were fabricated. I actually pointed out already in last year, right, as soon as I saw the documentation by the FDA, right, that they, on which they had based the approval of the Pfizer vaccine and also of the other vaccines, as soon as I saw the documentation and read it carefully, I could see the contradictions and the lies in those documents. Okay, so the FDA, in all of 2 or 3 weeks, that was about the time that they had available to themselves, right, to go through all the documents submitted to them by Pfizer and to concoct some sort of document for the public. Just looking through those documents, it was clear this was just a pack of lies. And the FDA must have known it, because the people at the FDA, they are experienced and well-trained. They are not dummies. And if they put out something like this, then this can only mean that somebody is holding a gun to their head. This is the only explanation that makes sense. And it's the same thing with the EMA, right, the European Medicines Agency, right? They just move, just like our governments move in lockstep to implement the same brain-dead and absurd measures all over the world, which proves that they get their playbook from somewhere else. So it is with these regulatory authorities that are asked to keep us safe, essentially. They are supposed to probably evaluate the documents submitted by the manufacturers. They are supposed to demand updates, enhancements, additional studies in order to sort out questions that arose during the review. None of this has happened. Right? If you look through the FDA documents and through the EMA documents, if you look through it, they just waved everything through, and they just simply invented excuses for Pfizer and for Moderna and so on, and also for themselves to rationalize their decision not to demand any sort of safety studies. Okay, so this is how these approval processes were engineered. So that's one big thing. So these vaccines, the efficacy data in those documents didn't work out, and obviously also there were grave safety risks that were apparent from the fragmentary, from the insufficient data. It was nevertheless clear that there were grave safety risks with these vaccines, and none of these were actually followed up in the clinical trials. Okay, so I have actually been saying this since before the vaccinations even started. It was clear. Okay, and also you brought up Dr. Bhakti. He was very clear, very explicit, very prescient in pointing out exactly where the damage would be happening. Dr. Bhakti has been clear on the point that the worst reactions would focus on the blood vessels, and there would be lots of blood clotting and so on and so forth. And this is exactly what we are seeing. In the adverse events reports dating databases, right, the VAERS system in the United States, user vigilance in the European Union and in some other databases. This is exactly what we're seeing, lots of clotting in addition to all kinds of inflammation. And it turns out now also in the findings that Dr. Burkhardt shared with the public, we see that pattern. We see that the blood vessels are at the heart of the matter, they get hit the hardest and most of the damage actually follows from there. But we also see more general inflammation of the tissues, as I will show you.
So basically, so these people died and they did autopsies on them, but how many people are alive and yet that process is at work in their body even now as we speak?
Yes, that is true. We have to expect that it is indeed, at least on a smaller scale, happening in others as well, right? And it's another important study that appeared recently was one that showed the spike protein to persist after vaccination for at least 4 months. Okay, that's a very long time. That also explains why some of the cases, right, Dr. Burkhardt autopsied, or he looked at the materials from autopsies of people who had died within from 1 week to almost 3 months of the vaccination, or more than 2 months of the vaccination. You might wonder if the death occurred more than 2 months after vaccination, is it still related to the vaccine? Now, given the fact that the spike protein can be detected after vaccination for 4 months, there's absolutely no difficulty there, right? So we cannot simply dismiss reports of inflammation and even death, even if they occur several months after the vaccination.
And that's now, a very good point. But a lot of people are just saying they're discounting deaths. You know, a heart attack happens 2 months after, 3 months after the vaccination. They're discounting all of that. That's how they're trying to eliminate the validity of the VAERS reports. Good point you're making.
Yeah. Now, we do see in the VAERS reports, we do see that most fatal events occur within about a week, right? Two days after vaccination are the very highest. About half of the fatal events reported occur within 2 days. 80% occur within a week, and the remainder then over a longer tail. Now the question is there also report bias in there? Are deaths that occur at a greater time, at a greater delay after vaccination, are they simply not reported because they are discounted as related to the vaccination anyway? So we don't know to what extent this curve is due to bias. Another point, in the VAERS database, we see a lot of myocarditis diagnosis among the young, and we see a lot of heart attacks among the elderly. Now, in Burkhardt's data, most of his patients were elderly. Right, and still he sees quite a bit of myocarditis in there. I'm just wondering how many cases that are diagnosed as heart attacks are indeed myocarditis, because if you don't do an autopsy and just go by a little bit of laboratory tests and by electrocardiogram and so on, you might actually conflate the two. That's possible.
Okay.
So in an elderly person, you would be inclined to assume it's a heart attack, because heart attacks are so much more common normally than myocarditis is. But it is quite possible, I think, that a fair share, not all, but a fair share, particularly of those late cases, of cardiac death in elderly patients is indeed due to myocarditis. Both heart attack and myocarditis can cause your heart to stop all of a sudden. Okay, simply by the observation that your heart stopped beating, you cannot make a determination what's the underlying pathological process.
You know, recent story, sir, is the New York Times editor who basically, it was one day, I believe, after his Moderna booster shot that he's died. And so There is definitely the beginning of not being able to hide some of these things when you're seeing more well-known people that this will happen to. But yet, they do continue to say, this is safe. I mean, that's the mantra that we're hearing all the time.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, it's obviously not safe. I mean, there's no reason to assume that it's safe. It's not going to get any safer. It's, if anything, it's going to get worse after each successive booster shot. Actually, my wife, she's Chinese, and she follows several social media websites of Chinese people, and she found several reports on there of people who, after their booster shot, had developed ulcers in their throats. Okay, that is normally, if you encounter it in medical practice, this is a clue that there might be something really bad going on, a lymphoma or a leukemia. So typically, if a person presents with this kind of sign, you would start blood work in order to diagnose some sort of hematological malignancy. Right? That would be at least there would be grounds for suspicion, so you would actually do this sort of diagnostics. Now, it doesn't mean that all of these patients have leukemia, but what it does suggest that all of these people have, at least in the short term, a very badly suppressed immune system. This is, right, this is the mechanism, right? The immune system is so far knocked out, that the local flora, bacterial flora on the mucous membranes of your mouth actually starts nibbling away at the mucous membranes. There's no more defense against this normally very innocuous and harmless microbial flora. So the defense breaks down. And that fits with a couple of other clinical observations, such as reactivated virus infections, exploding cancers and leukemias in some individuals, and so on and so forth. So there seems to be a very bad immune suppression, and we can only hope it's going to be transient and the immune system will recover itself. But it certainly won't if you keep getting those boosters, right? I mean, if you get booster after booster after booster, then your immune system will simply get knocked to the ground and never get up again.
I believe it's Dr. Cole in Idaho who is reporting on, you know, a vast increase in cancers.
Yes, that's right. And and also other people have come forward with similar observations. But Ryan Cole, I think, was the first one and the most clear and well-spoken one. He made it very plain from his own observations. And when he has personal, large body of evidence that he reviews,
It really is shocking. We're also all coming to the place, Dr. Palmer, where it's not just somebody in the news or someone else's story. We're all having friends impacted. We're beginning to hear of so-and-so's uncle who died a day later. Personal friends ending up in the hospital with, of course, an adverse reaction to a shot. And it begins to be a very personal issue. And so do you think we're making headway? Do you think anyone's paying attention? Why is there still this continued push, even to the point in Canada of talking about the immunization of babies?
Well, I mean, it certainly doesn't have an above board medical justification. This is just simply not possible. Nobody in their right mind can honestly believe that there is, you know. I mean, you have to be thoroughly brainwashed and completely bent out of shape mentally in order to buy into this story. So, I mean, the real purpose of any of this was never to keep anybody safe or to improve anybody's health. It was always an agenda of destruction. I mean, another thing that is very clear, I also, after looking in detail at the genome of this SARS-CoV-2 virus, SARS-CoV, it is clear just simply from looking at the sequence, this is a man-made virus. It's clear. You don't need to read a newspaper. You don't need to be disbelieve or disbelieve Fauci. You don't even need to listen to any of it. You just only need to look. You need to know what you're looking for, and you'll see those traits, which are very clearly. I mean, right? You can distinguish a piece of wilderness from a garden, right? You know which piece of landscape has been tended to by humans and which one hasn't.
So that's why it's so shocking.
You don't need to read about it. You don't need to know who exactly did what, but you
know.
It's obvious.
Because Dr. Fauci, he came out. He didn't want to go with the theory that it was man-made. I mean, Dr. Fauci presents himself as some kind of expert, and he's just brutal.
He may be an expert, but he is not an honest scientist. I mean, that's so much should be clear by now.
he's basically saying that he's ready to pull out, there could be an Omicron vaccine. That's the next thing.
Yeah, okay.
That, you know, I mean, it's just nuts.
To push more injections on the populace. I mean, it is clear. Regardless of whether or not the people in the West were in cahoots with the ones who produced the virus, it is clear that the whole reaction from the beginning was designed to maximize the damage on the economy, to take away people's freedoms, their livelihoods, this kind of thing, their assets. This is what's going on, and this was the plan from the very beginning. So simply the nature of the reaction, of the so-called response to this so-called emergent virus made it clear that both the virus and the so-called response states were part of the same engineered agenda. I mean, this was just simply obvious from the sheer nonsensicality of it. I mean, it never made any sense in terms of protecting people, protecting their health.
Okay. So really, this is just in your mind. You have made some very strong allegations that this is an agenda that's far different than, oh, we'll just get a vaccine to protect us from a man-made virus. This is far beyond
It was always clear not to properly develop a vaccine in a couple of months. Right? I mean, this is nonsense. I mean, for a proper vaccine development process takes years. So it was never any chance to develop a vaccine before the virus had spread through the entire population anyway, and everybody would have already had acquired natural immunity. There was never a chance to get a proper vaccine to market. What we have are not vaccines. These are not tested. They are not different. They are not, right? They have not undergone any proper testing. And they don't work like any proper would, right? We have three types of vaccines against viruses that so far have proven somewhat effective. Okay, we have the inactivated vaccine, so you simply grow yourself a batch of the virus and then you treat it with some chemical in order to kill it off, but it still remains good enough to stimulate an immune response. So you inject this inactivated virus and you get your immune response that works. This is, for example, what we do with poliomyelitis nowadays, right? We use this called good old vaccine. Then we can have a live virus vaccine. So this is an actual virus that has been typically passaged through some cell cultures, often derived from different host species, so that this virus has a bunch of mutations that improve its infectiousness for the other hosts, but decreases infectiousness for the human. Okay? So this sort of thing has been done with measles virus, for example. That's an attenuated virus. And then we have the so-called subunit vaccines in which we use recombinant DNA technology to produce a fragment of the virus. For example, with hepatitis B, we just produce the major surface antigen of the hepatitis B virus, which as such is not infectious. We just inject it and we get our antibody. That works. These are the tried and true methods. Why did we have to all of a sudden throw all this experience away and switch to these experimental gene-based vaccine if at the same time we also wanted to produce a new vaccine in record time? I mean, wouldn't common sense suggest that if you have little time, you have a new virus against which to develop a vaccine, you would rely on the method that you understand that has been successful in the past, instead of using a method that has no track record of success at all? I mean, it made no sense. This is just... It's a total bullshit story.
Right,
it's
and
a total
I was...
bullshit story.
I thought maybe we could, with that information, we could ask Catherine Austin Fitz a question, because we're going to talk to her a little bit more in a bit as well, but does it make sense, Catherine, then, with what he's saying, that it's not even needed. We don't even need this kind of vaccine, which is not a vaccine, experimental gene therapy. And so really, it's much more, it seems that it would be tied into a financial agenda.
So it's tied into a global coup d'etat. You're looking at a fundamental restructuring of how the governance system works on planet Earth, so it has nothing to do with health. It has to do with control in a variety of ways. First of all, it's going to help bring down the life expectancy of the population, which is part of what you need to reconcile the fact that you literally have shifted a lot of the retirement savings away, and you can't keep your promise. So it's a way of dealing with the fact that that you're going to abrogate contracts for the population. The second thing is, you don't really know, we know a great deal about what's in these injections and the harm that it does. We have a lot of unanswered questions about what's in them and how it relates to the vaccine task force and the IV system. The people who are most pushing for these to be mandated are the central bankers. And so it's only because they want the vaccine task force. The vaccine task force are part of a control system that will allow them not just to mandate health policies, but financial policies, and ultimately to take away your assets. So this is part of a global coup d'etat, and it's very important to understand that if the vaccine task force go into place, that every liberty that we sort of known and taken for granted in the West can and likely will be taken away. So think of this as a sneaky marketing plan for completely upending the financial system into one where if you don't do what you're told, you won't be allowed to, for example, when you combine vaccine passports with central bank digital currency known as CBDC, if you don't, if they don't want you traveling more than 5 miles from your home, you won't be able to. Your credit card won't work 5 miles from your home. Your bank account won't work. They can turn your bank account off. If they don't want you buying pizza, you can't buy pizza. And this can all be run with AI and software so that it's a very economic system.
So the story that I mentioned earlier on, which is nothing that I can verify as of yet, but I am told that people in France are verifying this, do you think that there is some probability that somehow some of the vaccines contain some sort of number and that the beginning of this process is already there?
So here's what you need to know. All you need to run a complete control system is the vaccine task force. So you don't need any secret ingredient. I mean, I do believe that there are inexplicable ingredients in here, and it would be great to know all the ingredients. But you can simply use the vaccination passport, vaccination process to get the passport really what you need. And you don't need any ingredient in the human body to serve as an ID. Not to say that those ingredients might not be there, we don't know. But in other words, the vaccine passports are what gives you your control, and almost indifferent to what's in the injections themselves.
Right. That makes a lot of sense. And so it's all actually very terrifying. Dr. Palmer, you agree that this is very bad, and you are asking people not to comply. You are saying that if this means a hit right now for people's jobs, you're saying, well, you might have to put up with something, but you're also of the opinion that if we keep on getting information and we keep standing, that maybe we will see victory.
Yeah, I mean, we have to try, right? I mean, there's simply no...
no choice.
There's no other option. I mean, you cannot win it. You cannot comply your way into freedom.
Right. Right.
And I mean, you cannot win at this game of getting after the next and to buy to rent your freedom for another 3 months. It's simple.
But you also have to understand that if you comply with this, not only can they continue to give you injections that could kill you, but they can take away your property. They can take away your assets.
Yes,
they can take away
yes.
everything.
Yes.
So if you comply, you have no chance. If you don't comply, we have a chance to stop it. Our only chance is if we
yep.
don't comply and enough of us do it and we're able to prevent it.
Yep, that's exactly it. I agree completely.
And Dr. Palmer, you had some information that you wanted to share, some graphs.
Okay.
Please,
well,
yeah.
I can do that now. I will try to maybe
yes.
I can skip some of it. Let's see how that goes.
Oh, don't skip anything.
Well,
just tell us everything. Our audience
okay.
is dying. We have a huge audience watching right now. People are
okay.
loving you guys and appreciative of this
okay.
valuable information.
Okay, good. So what I really want to do is I want to give an update on the toxicity of mRNA vaccines, and we are going to start with a brief recap of how these things work. We have some lipid nanoparticles that enclose the messenger RNA, and the messenger RNA is inserted into the target cells of the host of our own bodies, and there it is released into the cell. This is the function of some specific cationic lipids. We have a mixture of lipid molecules here, and the cationic lipids are the ones that cause the release of the mRNA, which then, once inside the cell, is free to direct the synthesis of spike proteins, and the spike protein is taken to the cell surface. Okay. Now, what this does, it attracts the attention of the immune system, which will produce antibodies against the spike protein. That is one effect. Okay, and this, these antibodies and the immune effector mechanisms, controlled by them, they will attack the cell that produces the spike protein. Part of the spike protein will actually undergo degradation inside the cell, and the fragments will appear on the cell surface in some other place, and the fragments will activate another arm of the immune system, the so-called cytotoxic T cells. So these cells will also start attacking the cells that had started making the spike protein. So these are two mechanisms of toxicity. We have a third one, and this is the cleavage of the spike protein, right? Part of the molecule that appears here on the cell surface can be released and can then swim away through the bloodstream, for example, and can inside the bloodstream activate blood platelets, and that contributes to blood clotting. Okay, so these are the major mechanisms. Now, toxicity mechanisms, in addition to these, to the immune attack by both antibodies and B cells, and as well as T cells, all cells that produce the spike protein. We also have direct cytotoxicity of the cationic lipids. I will get back to this a little bit later on. Okay, now, what do we really know about the toxicity of these vaccines from preclinical trials? There wasn't really a whole lot in the FDA documentation, but some months after the vaccines had already been in use, some studies surfaced that Pfizer had submitted to the Japanese regulators, okay? And there was some surprising bits of information there. The first really surprising feature is that even a quarter, right, 15 minutes after injection, we already see quite a bit of the vaccine appearing in the bloodstream, Okay, and after 2 hours we reach a peak, and then the vaccine in the bloodstream decreases as it accumulates in various organs. And we have among the organs in which this accumulates, we have the usual suspects, the liver and the spleen. I'm not going to go to the reasons of those, but we also have high levels in the adrenal glands and in the ovaries, right? With obvious risks for, in this case, fertility, and with adrenal glands, that's not a good thing to have this much vaccine there either. Now, if we look at it, at these data, right, we can ask ourselves, what sort of toxicity should we have expected, right? What toxicity do we need to worry about, okay? The first thing is, if the vaccine appears so rapidly in the bloodstream, we would have to expect that the spike protein is produced in the blood vessels, and then the immune system will destroy those cells in the blood vessels, and this will lead to blood clotting. This is exactly what Dr. Bhakti has been saying since the very beginning.
Right, and this would be what he's finding in the autopsies, I guess, right?
This is exactly the evidence
that he's finding in dead individuals, right?
I will show you that in a second, exactly. Now, the question is, did Pfizer actually follow up this potential risk in clinical trials? The answer is obviously no. The FDA didn't make them do it. The EMA didn't make them do it. Nobody made them do it. They just simply waved it away. Okay, then we have the distribution, right, in many organs, right, also in organs other than the ones listed here. So this means we can expect inflammation in many organs. And if we have widespread inflammation, we can expect autoimmune diseases. This is also substantiated by Burkhardt's findings. It also was not followed up in the clinical trials. Then, because we see the accumulation in these organs, right, we can infer the biochemical mechanism by which this accumulation occurs. I'm not going to go into details, but we have to infer that it is likely also going to accumulate in the placenta and in lactating breast glands. Also, this risk was not followed up with any animal trials and not in clinical trials either. Okay, but Burkhardt actually has now looked at one placenta and found major lesions there as well. And in both VAERS and Utrovigilans, there are reports of babies, of breastfed infants that died or got severely sick shortly after their mothers had been injected with a vaccine. This risk had to be expected based on the data I just showed you. It was not followed up. There was no participation of pregnant women or of young mothers in the vaccine trials, but nevertheless, the vaccine was applied to young mothers right away with disastrous results. Okay, now you already know these numbers, right? This happens to be a statistic from Utrovigilans. I'm not going to go over all of it, but all four vaccines have a sizable body count and a total of almost 25,000. That was the case in September. Now Utrovigilans is actually above 30,000. So now I come to the autopsies by Burkhardt, okay? As Dr. Bhakti said, the people who were autopsied here had initially not even been, their deaths had not been connected to the vaccination, and it was due to the initiative of the family that these autopsies were carried out in the first place. Okay? So, and Burkhardt concludes from his findings that in all but one of these patients, the vaccine was likely or highly likely the cause of death, right? He deems it highly likely in about half the cases and a somewhat lower grade of likelihood in the residual cases. Okay, so before I show you more pathology picture slides, I just want to give you an example of this is a bit of healthy liver tissue, and this is what it looks like under the microscope. So now what are we looking at here? We see individual cells, right? You can see the outlines of them, and you see the bluish cell nuclei, right? So these colors are not there during life. These colors are induced simply by staining the tissue samples with a mixture of dyes. Now, the nuclei are always very well defined, right? We cannot always see where one cell ends and the other begins. It's also not so important, but we can infer where there's a nucleus of cell, okay? Now, let's get into it. I told you earlier on that the blood vessels are at the center of the pathology, okay? Now, here we have a healthy venule. A venule is a very small vein. We see here the outline of it, and in the middle we see some blood, right? So these red dots here, these are red blood cells. The bluish ones, these are leukocytes of various kinds. So this is a healthy venule. Notice we have this nice, very thin, delicate cell layer, which goes all around. This is the so-called endothelial cell layer. And delicate as it is, this cell layer stands between you. That's all that stands between you and disaster. Okay, this endothelial cell layer is necessary. It must be intact in order to prevent the blood from clotting. Whenever the endothelial cell layer is ruptured, for example, if you cut yourself or if there is some inflammation that kills some of the cells in this endothelial cell layer, then the blood will start clotting. Okay. Now here we see a venule from one of these vaccine victims. So what we see here is the support structure is still there, but the endothelial cells are peeled off. They are all congregating here in the middle of the blood vessel. So they are swollen up, right? The nuclei look bigger now. They are swollen up, but they are all detached from the support. So this means the blood gets directly into contact with the support and it will start clotting. Okay. We see here a venule in advanced stage of disintegration, right? So here we still have an intact outline. Here we don't. Here we don't, right? Here it's already kind of merged with the surrounding tissue. Okay. What we also see here, that's very important, you see these little blue cells, right? All round like balls, and there's very little cytoplasm, right? Very little other recognizable matter around them. We will see lots of these lymphocytes. That's important. The lymphocytes are the backbone of the specific immune system, right? The lymphocytes do the recognizing if there is some, for example, the spike protein or some other antigen, and they do the antibody producing, and they do the killing of the cells that produce the spike protein, for example. Here on the right-hand side, a similar situation, but a different staining technique, which just highlights the lymphocytes, right? So you see the lymphocytes here invading the space between the support and the detached endothelial cell layer. So lots of vascular damage, right? That's point one. Now, Sucharit also mentioned the damage to the lungs, right, which is very important. On the left-hand side, again, to orient ourselves, we have some healthy lung tissue. What we see here is just a fascinating organ. I'm not going to dwell too long on it, even though I really like it here, right? We see some blood-filled blood vessels here. We see these delicate tissue layers, right? These are air-filled spaces. So here's the air that you breathe in and out. And you see these delicate tissue layers, and embedded, you see all this red. These are the capillaries through which the blood flows. Okay, so we have this very effective exchange of gases across a very short distance. Now here on the right-hand side, what we see here is another blood vessel that looks still sort of intact, even so the endothelial cell layers here, and that's also suspicious. But we see here this big blob, this big cluster of lymphocytes, right? So we have a big invasion of autoimmune-like, of immune cells. So that's one thing. Then we see an advanced stage of lung damage, lots of lymphocytes, all these blue dots here are lymphocytes, very little air-filled space left here, right? It is all filled with scar tissue. So this person would have had a very hard time breathing, right? There is simply no more air really reaching the lung. And again, also driven by these lymphocytes. And now heart tissue, here we have healthy muscle fibers, right? We see the nuclei, we don't see a very clear delineation between individual muscle cells, but they sort of align into these intact fibers. Here on the right-hand side, we see invasion by multiple lymphocytes. And these are the remnants of the myocardial, of the heart muscle fibers undergoing destruction. Here we see a healthy liver tissue, right, at lower magnifications than earlier on. It's the same organ, right? So we have this sponge-like structure here, mostly just epithelial liver cells, regular liver cells visible.
Here on the right-hand side, again, big clusters of lymphocytes, which shouldn't be there. We also see this big fat, these big fat droplets here, right? Accumulation of fat is something that always happens to the liver. If it feels bad for some reason, then the liver starts accumulating fat. That tends to be reversible, but this sort of inflammation probably will leave behind some scar tissue and some functional deficit. Okay, the thyroid gland, right? This is another fascinating organ, right? This is a regular thyroid gland structure. I'm not going to go into the details, even though I would like to, but here we see on the right-hand side, completely destroyed, right? This very well-defined tissue structure here with these follicles is gone. You don't see it anymore. All you see is just a big accumulation of lymphocytes. And so this is actually a somewhat rarer finding. This was present in only one or two patients. The previous findings, right, in the liver, lung, and heart, they were quite common and present in the majority of the patients. Okay, so Burkhardt calls his findings lymphocyte amok. Okay, the lymphocytes run amok all over the place in all the body. Really unprecedented. This just doesn't happen normally, right? If you have some specific autoimmune disease, you can have something like this, right? Thyroiditis Hashimoto, but then it will affect only the thyroid gland. Or you can have something similar in the salivary glands, that's known as Sjögren's disease, but you won't have it anywhere else, and so on and so forth. But to have at the same time the lymphocytes attacking all organ systems, that is unheard of. And since it is so unique, it is pretty clear it must be ascribed to the vaccines, right? We saw the focus on the blood vessels, right? The destruction of the blood vessels leads to blood clotting. We have large and small clots all over the place in all variations. We have in some cases, right? We have in some cases manifestations, for example, in these glands that resemble true autoimmune disease. And in here we note that excessive stimulation of the immune system is known to cause autoimmunity. And we have to expect that in some people, even right, if the damage to the lung and the heart and the liver proves survivable and may even restore time, that in some specific organ, some autoimmune disease will be left behind. Okay? Then, what this also, these findings also suggest, right? We have such a high level of inflammation and such a high level of lymphocyte deployment that the immune system is no longer able, it has no more bandwidth left, no more attention left to defend against proper real pathogens, real viruses, for example, or even the bacterial flora on the mucous membranes of your throat, as I mentioned earlier, right? After the third injection, some people show with ulcers in those locations. So the immunosuppression would also be explained by this diffuse, widespread deployment of lymphocytes. Okay, now, since we are talking about mRNA technology, bears mention, right, that this technology has never worked. The idea is old. It was first tried in the 1990s, right? I'm not even sure we should call it a technology because it never worked, right? Yes. If I say I have invented a technology to levitate, but it doesn't work, is it a technology or just a figment of my imagination?
Right.
It's not really a technology. So, okay, now one important point, right? I find it worthwhile to dig it up. Whitney Webb, the independent journalist, she wrote a wonderful expose on Moderna and their many failures, right? Everything they tried failed. And importantly, what failed was also this approach. They didn't try to use it as a vaccine initially, but they want to try genetic enzyme defects. Now, why is this important? Why is the failure important? In this case, we are trying to introduce a functioning version of an enzyme into the body that already has a deficient version. So there won't be an immune response to it, or only a very, very minor one. So any toxicity that was observed in those trials, and it was observed because the clinical trials were discontinued, must be due to something else than these immunological mechanisms, right? And the toxicity here is due to the cationic lipids, right? These crucial components of the lipid mixture, of the lipid nanoparticles that is needed for releasing the mRNA into the cell, right? The uptake of the lipid nanoparticles into the cell that works without cationic lipids, but to release the mRNA from the cage into the cell so that it can start directing the synthesis of the protein that it encodes, that requires these cationic lipids. And these are always toxic, okay? Now, one important point is that the cationic lipids cause DNA damage. Why is that so? Cationic lipids, as I just mentioned, they are needed to breach the cell's membrane barriers. And this will then also happen to the so-called mitochondria. This is a membrane-delimited structure inside the cell. And in this compartment, hydrogen is reacted with oxygen. If these mitochondria are damaged, this means that they will produce partially reduced, highly reactive oxygen species. These cause damage from radiation effects, right, downstream of ionizing radiation, such as gamma rays. It's also reactive oxygen species that's generated and cause the actual DNA damage. Now, DNA damage in turn, as you probably know, causes cancer. Another important point is that the DNA damage, regardless of its cause, has a lifetime dose limit. You can give a person only so much radiation. You can give them only so much cytotoxic anti-cancer drugs before they give out. If you go over that dose limit, you will kill them. You cannot give, for example, the same person two bone marrow transplants, right? The
right.
amount of DNA toxicity that you apply in preparation for the first one is so high that you have maxed them out. You cannot go beyond that limit. Now, in this context, we must note that right now there seems to be a bonanza in progress, right? Even so, mRNA vaccines and therapeutics have failed so far for decades. Now, all of a sudden, they are considered a hot commodity. There are plenty, there are dozens of varieties now in testing, okay? Now, the important point to note here is all of these, regardless of what their purpose may be, all of them will have to contain these cationic lipids. And the lipid toxicity will be cumulative across all of them. So if you get your 4 or 8 COVID shots and then you get another 8 shots against some virus that has been reactivated by the COVID shots and you have 16 shots, the lipid toxicity across all of these 16 shots will have to be counted together, and it will count towards this lifetime dose limit, right? So before you drop dead. This is the plan. This is the plan. So it goes beyond COVID. This mRNA technology is a great way to poison the population. Everybody's death will look a bit different, right? You might die simply because you succumb to an infection. You might develop a cancer. You might develop a leukemia, whatever it is, okay? Everybody will look different, but ultimately they will all have been poisoned in the same way. So now just one more nugget here about this, okay? So this issue, this question of DNA toxicity actually came up in the EMA approval process of the Moderna vaccine. There were some animal trials that clearly showed the Moderna vaccine to have DNA, to cause DNA damage. So this is what the EMA made of it. No carcinogenicity studies were submitted. This is scientifically acceptable and in line with relevant guidelines on non-clinical development of vaccine candidates. Not expected to have carcinogenic potential. They are not expected. They are expected. I can give you a literature list with dozens of articles that show all the same point, that these cationic lipids have DNA damaging potential, which equates carcinogenic potential. Okay, this is what the EMA makes of it. They call this a vaccine, and therefore they simply go by these guidelines that may be suitable for granddaddy's old vaccine because we already know what's in there, but certainly it's not applicable to these completely novel and untested compounds.
I mean, this is a danger to all of society, to everyone we know and love who's taken this.
Absolutely.
And they know this, and I mean, this is the science behind it. People are loving this in the comments. They are so grateful for something so graphic that they can literally, you know, see what is being found out about these vaccines. Thank you. Please continue.
So I'm actually more or less at the end. I would just reiterate, right, now, as Sucharit said, I completely agree with him. We have unambiguous evidence that the predicted harm due to immune attack on self is indeed manifest. Okay. We also see that the EMA and FDA are completely captured. And this is the basis on which the pharmaceutical companies now want to cash in. They know that anything they want to ram down our throats is going to be waved through by the EMA and the FDA because these agencies no longer function.
So that's really what this is. Yeah.
This is it. The FDA and the EMA, I mean, I have looked at the reports on Janssen, on AstraZeneca, on Moderna, on Pfizer, both from the FDA and from the EMA. And it is clear from each single of these reports that no proper safety work has been done. And that neither of these agencies imposed any serious demands on any of these manufacturers. They are completely taken out. They are simply completely, they have a gun to their heads. That's the only picture I can come up with. FDA and EMA have a gun to their heads. This is what the pharmaceutical companies are banking on in their effort to develop all these wonderful new therapeutics and drugs. Okay? And if you give me 2 more minutes, I want to make
absolutely.
One more point.
Please.
One more point, okay? Why the mRNA vaccines were a bad idea from first principles, okay? We have some people, I have to call them out for this, I'm sorry, but I have to call out the great inventor, Robert Malone. He now says, okay, he's seen the light that mRNA vaccines, after all, are not a good idea. They were never a good idea based on first principles, and he should have known it and he should have told us. Not some nobody guy from Waterloo like myself should have to say this. He should have told us, and he never did. He never reveals anything that is actually novel and substantial. He always says something about it somebody else has already said. So now the difference between a regular virus or a live vaccine and a mRNA vaccine in 3 minutes. Okay, what happens in a primary infection with a viral particle? A viral particle contains the nucleic acid encoding a specific antigen, but it also contains the protein antigen itself. So in the naive host that doesn't have any prior immunity, the virus succeeds in infecting a cell. It produces the antigens which appear on the cell surface, and the immune system kicks in. It makes antibodies, it makes cytotoxic T cells, and these destroy the cell. So in the initial infection, you will have some cell death, you will have some attendant inflammation, and this is why you get sick. What happens in reinfection? Now you have the antibodies bind to these antigens on the surface of the virus particle, and this prevents the virus, in most cases at least, from infecting a cell, and instead the virus is neutralized and undergoes degradation, which means after reinfection, you don't get sick. Okay, simple as that. That's the purpose of immunity after all. Now, if we have an mRNA vaccine, we inject the nucleic acid encapsulated in a completely non-characteristic lipid envelope. Okay, initially, the first injection triggers a similar process, right? So the mRNA enters the cell, the antigens are expressed, and the cell is killed off. Okay? What happens upon re-injection and booster injection? We have the antibodies, but the antibodies, unlike with the virus, they have nothing to grab onto because the antigen simply isn't there. Simple as that. So there is nothing to stop the mRNA to reach the cells again, but now we have an even angrier immune system that attacks those cells, and we have more cell death. So with a regular virus or a regular live vaccine, the second injection is benign, and any subsequent injection or infection will be benign. With an mRNA vaccine, booster injections will tend to get worse and worse because the immune system is going to get riled up more and more, and therefore we will see a more immediate response to the expression of the virus antigens, and we will see more cells killed. So for this very simple, elementary reason, nobody should ever have thought about using mRNA vaccines against any infectious agent. It is just for this very simple first principle that this should never have been even tried. And those people who claim to be experts in this so-called technology, they should have known, they should have told us from the very beginning, and they did not. So that's it. That's the end of my presentation. Thank you.
Oh, my goodness. I mean, that is just right there in your face. We've been hearing about this. We've been hearing about, like, the cytokine storm and things that I remember Del Bigtree sort of did an analogy yep. of how you train. Basically, these shots are training to only look for one thing, and then when the reinfection or variants come along, they can't recognize them. Is that sort of...
Well, that's another aspect of it. Yes, these vaccines, they only contain one single antigen, and a natural infection will always train the immune system against all viral antigens, right? This spike protein comes for only about 1/8 of the information inside the virus. A natural infection with a real virus will train the immune system against 100% of the viral antigens, so viral information.
I mean, based on this, there should be a dead stop. There should be a stop right now because of the damage being done by the vaccines.
It should never have started. It shouldn't have even been tried. It is just simply not a suitable technology. You allow the acid to fly under the radar to evade body defense. And therefore, regardless of pre-existing immunity, the mRNA is going to reach its target cells and is going to induce these cells to make the antigen, and this will cause the immune system to attack the body cells. And this is going to get worse and worse every time with each successive injection. This is the point. And this is just argued from first principles. It is not specific for COVID. It is not even specific for the spike protein. Any antigen that you would introduce into the body in this form will be problem. This technology is fundamentally flawed. This technology is fundamentally flawed. Even before we look at the first fatality, we know it's flawed.
And now we're seeing more and more and more fatalities, yes. And that's only in the, reported. So we have a big problem. Catherine Austin Fitz has been waiting on the sidelines here. So as you hear this information and you team that up and put the puzzle pieces together with the global agenda that you're talking about, Catherine, what do you see here?
So the existing leadership of three of the financial systems doesn't see a way of maintaining democracy in the West they don't see a way of getting elected after they inform everybody they've stolen their retirement savings. So they're moving forward with a global coup d'etat. What you're watching in country after country is the central bankers taking over the treasury function because once they have vaccine passports and CBDCs, they can, in effect, tax without representation. There's an old principle in the Western democracies, no taxation without representation, and that's what this is going to come down to. So what Dr. Palmer has so brilliantly explained is that there's somebody who's trying to kill us. And, you know, it's a slow kill, but it's kill. And that means we have to take action. The first thing we have to do is protect ourselves and our these injections. But then the second thing we have to do is stop the vaccine passport, because otherwise we'll find ourselves in a, literally every community will become a digital concentration camp. And then we're going to have to take back our governments, including our treasury.
That is very sobering. I was reading an article this morning from Dr. Mercola, and I appreciate his truth telling. He's often as well not allowed to speak these days, but his article very shockingly says the unvaxxed may soon be shipped to quarantine camps, and that's a terrible statement. But according to President Biden, a winter of death awaits anyone who rejects the experimental COVID jab. And this is what they're predicting, is a winter of death. They seem to be able to tell you what's happening, but it's not in the right context.
I would be very careful with that, because it's not, I mean, yes, in selected places we've seen the creation of camps for right purposes, including quarantine, but I assure you, they don't have the financial resources to put a third to a quarter of the population in camps. But more importantly, what you have to understand is the vaccine passport combined with an all-digital transaction system like CBDC means we're going to have digital concentration camps. In other words, our communities are going to be converted into concentration camps implemented with digital means. It's far more horrible than, you know, a few camps here and there.
Right, so, you're saying basically they can shut down your life. They don't need to put you in a camp, because they'll just you'll just be imprisoned in your own home. Basically, if they can tell if you're going 5 miles away and your credit card won't work, like you were saying, like what are you to do?
Right. In other words, you won't be able to transact with their permission. If they decide they want to raise your children and they want to come and take your children, they can. So, you know, this is, it's, I think it's very hard for people in the Western world to contemplate the kind of sort of complete digital control they feel they can implement with this technology. But we have, in 2022, the possibility of stopping it. This can be stopped. But it's going to take a significant number of people to act in accordance with their own best interests and the best interests of their family, their neighbors, and the loved ones.
So what would it be to both of you? What would it be? What would it take? And what would it look like to stand against it? We've decided we're not taking the vaccine. We're going to speak about the harms that we're seeing. But many of our friends and our loved ones, they are busy in their lives. They have not paid attention. They've gotten their two shots, and maybe they'll take a booster. Maybe that's it for them. Maybe they'll take two. What is the time period? It looks like we're not there, because we're not actually seeing people really put up the resistance, especially in Canada, that we hope they would.
So I can't speak to Canada, but I've seen significant resistance all over the world. And a great deal of that resistance is quiet. You know, people taking their money out and putting it in a more trustworthy local community bank or credit union. You know, turning off all the big tech companies and stopping giving them access. You know, we have a campaign called Cash Friday, where we ask everybody to use cash, and now a lot of people are using cash every day, because the more we can walk away from the digital concentration camp, the better. But we're going to have to start fighting with our state and local representatives, and we're going to have to march into court. You know, this has to be very broad-based, and we have to say, no, we will not do this. We will not comply. If we don't comply, they can't implement the vaccine passport.
Okay.
Now, they want to get us into the trap before we see that it's a trap. And what Dr. Palmer and the Doctors for COVID Ethics and people with radio shows like yours are trying to do is tell people, there's a trap, don't get in it.
Right. So will something like a credit union still be a danger, though, if you put your money over into a credit union? Aren't there still governmental ways that they would control them? I mean, do you recommend gold and silver and anything like that?
So what we're talking about doing is decentralizing. We've seen the central bankers over the last 10 years try and implement very bad policies and been stopped in the United States because there were still 5,000 community bankers who started screaming. You know, everything you do, every penny that you can decentralize, the better. Make no mistake about it, the last 18 months has been phenomenally profitable for the billionaire class. We have 500 new billionaires. The profit variations on consolidating market share from small businesses has been enormous. You know, what we're talking about here, the pandemic has been phenomenally successful for the people who run the financial system. And we have to see that and play likewise. So anytime we can move our money out of their companies and into companies owned by us and our neighbors and family and friends and start to circulate, whether it's bank deposits, purchases, equity, and most important, food, energy, you know, how are we going to provide food for ourselves? How are we going to provide energy for us? Remember, in the digital concentration camp, they're saying, you know, if you don't do exactly what we tell you, we're going to cut off your food, we're going to cut off your energy. That's a business opportunity to start providing food and energy, all these other things for ourselves.
Well, and that is exactly what we're reading more and more. As you prepare this, all of this information, Dr. Palmer, you're in Canada. I did an incredible interview with Dr. It was Earl, the fellow who was on the warp speed. Paul Alexander is who I mean. Yes, Dr. Hoff is amazing, and he's just spearheaded D-dimer tests and all of that. Dr. Paul Alexander, being on the Warp Speed team with the Trump Organization, but just talking about the alarming thing now is, like, this has failed, but the powers that be, like, for instance, it's New Year's in just one day, in 24 hours, people will be celebrating. They're not supposed to be, because the powers that be they don't care that this is a failed experiment. And if they do or don't know, which I'm assuming they have to know, they bought out to their agenda. And so they hold all the strings. And now the people who say, well, I'm not going to do it or this and that, they start implementing these certain things, people losing their jobs and whatnot. Is there a certain period of time where we can get this back?
But I just have to tell you one thing. There are, in a centralized system, there are very few people in control. If you look at everyone who's implementing this system, it's us. We're financing and building our own trap, and we have the power to stop.
Well, and I guess that's what we hope for. Is that what you believe, Dr. Palmer? I mean, we pray that more people show up with information and they make a stand.
Well, I think, yes, I'm actually optimistic.
I'm not feeling as optimistic these days, but I'm so glad to hear that you are, and I join my faith with yours.
I was delighted to find out just a while ago here in Waterloo, there is a very large local group of everyday people, not on campus here. On campus, we have about 100, 120 signatories to an open letter that we sent to the authorities on campus. But there is a group of citizens of Waterloo. They have a Facebook group with 4,000 or 5,000 people. So at least, right? I wasn't expecting that. So there are quite a few people from all walks of life who are aware of what's going on. They understand not only that the vaccines are bad and so on, they understand what Catherine is saying. They understand the political agenda behind it. I think it is really, it's catching on. Whether it's the majority, probably it's not the majority of the population, but it's a sizable minority. And I don't even think we need the majority necessarily. We need just a determined minority to get this to a stop. I mean, you have already said yourself, right? We have reached a stage at which people get to know or learn of vaccine adverse effects among the family. This will not help to persuade them to get another booster and get another booster. I think each time another booster is mandated, more people will actually jump off and will say, okay, that's enough, I've had it.
And then we hope that we see success. And, you know, I truly want that. I think that the alarming concern is that maybe we have a bit of time in between that point and the initialization of the boosters, and all the while we're seeing the implementation of more and more lockdowns and strategies that are harmful to us physically and financially. And there are things that they could do, Catherine, I guess in the next little bit, that we'll have to stand up against.
So, you know, at one point when I spent 11 years litigating with this, you know, up against what I'll call the pro-centralization scene. And one of the things I did during that period is I went back and looked at the history of all my ancestors. And if you look back at the history of our ancestors, whether you're in Canada or you're in the United States or anywhere in the world, if you look at what we've overcome for the last 2,000+ years, you know, I dare say we can do this.
Right, right. So I'm so sorry about that. There's a war going on outside. When you're advising people, then Catherine, in the financial field and all of that, you're giving this advice that you've already given to us, basically. And are people willing to make these big sweeping changes? I'm willing to. Honestly, I mean, I don't have,
What I see are more and more people doing it, as Dr. Palmer described. It's kind of it's developing momentum. You know, one of the things that's important to understand is that financial assets cannot solve a political problem. There's no place you can put your money if the world's going to be run by organized crime that's safe. In other words, if there's no rule of law, then your financial assets have no value except what you can protect with a gun, maybe, okay? So at some point, most people, particularly people with family wealth, realize, you know, if organized crime is free to come take my assets, I've either got to stop that or I'm not going to have any. In other words, there's no work around here. And so what I see are more and more people, including people of real means, you know, starting to take action and realizing if they let the vaccine task force go into effect, you know, then somebody can mandate putting poisons in their body and stripping out and emptying their bank account and brokerage account.
Well, when we see that some places in the world have actually already begun, we've got video of people being vaccinated even against their will. I mean, there is a danger of just complete civil unrest and an uprising, which might be very necessary. But we do hope that the powers that be, with all of this information, if they're busted, I mean, if people like Dr. Palmer keep speaking, if people like yourself, Catherine, keep speaking, you have to believe that sooner or later it gets a bit embarrassing to actually be on the wrong side of this.
I think it's very important to frame this correctly. We are the bringers of the law. Our objection is that the global governments, many of them are operating outside the law. They're violating their own laws. and our tax money and different resources are being used in ways that are criminal. Our objection is to failure to follow the law. And we are the bringers of the law. We're not bringers of the revolution. They're the bringers of the revolution. You know, this is a global coup d'etat. We're trying to stop a global coup and return the rule of law. So we are the bringers of the law.
That's so good. And in your understanding of, you know, being a Christian as well, I guess this is very much a spiritual battle, not just a physical and medical battle. This is really of epic proportions, good against evil. It's the ultimate, it's the biggest fight of good against evil I think that we've ever seen. And it's just beginning, and we intend to win.
I agree with that.
Right, and because the big issues here are not financial. Sorry, Michael. The big issues
ahead.
Here are not financial. They're about protecting our children and the next generations and preserving a human culture and civilization for everyone and the next generation. So this is, you're right, this is much bigger than just a medical or a legal or a financial fight. This is, you know, this is about the future of our civilization and whether we're going to have a civilization.
Yeah, I agree with that. But there's also, I mean, obviously there's danger. We don't have to belabor that point, but there's also really a chance. I mean, we see much more clearly than we ever thought we might be able to who is who in this fight. I mean, everybody, I mean, there are a lot of people on the wrong side, but they have all revealed themselves. Every judge that defends nonsensical legislation or rejects well-founded lawsuits that are brought before him has revealed himself. All the media that keep repeating the same tired old lies that have already been 100,000 times refuted, they have revealed themselves. Every prime minister, every provincial premier who just keeps pushing vaccine mandates, they reveal themselves. Right. So I think we could, without this, we would never have seen as clearly as we do now where we stand, where who stands, who is on which side of this fight. So I think there is a huge opportunity for a real clean out and for a real new beginning that we didn't, that we would not otherwise have gotten.
I like that. You give me great hope, Dr. Palmer, because... You know, dealing with this every single day, I appreciate, you know, you both said, well, obviously we see that people are trying to kill us and it's a, you know, it's the worst evil, you know, of all time. But you're seeing that there is a light at the end of the tunnel. And I think about how truth always shatters deception. It always does. It shines a light. There is, it's a really mystical, it's a powerful spiritual perspective and principle that light shines into a dark place and the darkness simply vanishes. And as you are both literally doing this, you're shining, you know, the light into this dark place and it is vanishing. So it's a bit of a fight, but I think that's an encouragement to all the people that are watching and thousands that will see this in the next couple of days. Catherine, I understand that you like this book. I'm holding up The Real Anthony Fauci, Bill Gates, Big Pharma, and the Global War on Democracy and Public Health. And a very fascinating book telling the truth about this Anthony Fauci, who is, even as we speak, probably planning an Omicron vaccine.
So I wrote a review of the book. It's by Robert Kennedy Jr. And it's excellent, and it helps people understand the extent of the regulatory capture and corruption. You know, the government is now really a subsidiary of the big pharma company, and it's pretty frightening, but it does a very good job. Kennedy does an excellent job. He's a seasoned litigator of documenting how bad it is. And I think, you know, for many people, it's hard to believe it got this bad without them noticing. But, you know, Kennedy does a great job of helping you understand and helping you understand why you've got to act now, because this thing has reached a point of no return. And so it's going to require radical action. I just want to add one thing to the many reasons for optimism. And that is, if you look at the economy, when you centralize control, both secrecy and central control is phenomenally expensive. if we can decentralize a great deal of the economy in ways that dramatically improve productivity, you know, tyranny is very, very bad for productivity, particularly a small business, which we've seen a lot. You know, we've seen a lot of small businesses unnecessarily destroyed over the last 2 years. So decentralization can produce phenomenal amounts of wealth if done properly. So there is no reason for poverty and suffering economically as far as I know or can see. So, you know, we just can't afford this kind of billionaire class.
Well, that is all very good news. And the both of you are fighting as hard as you can. And I just want to extend a very grateful thank you, as all of the viewers that are commenting in the feeds are just like phenomenal. Dr. Palmer, your explanation and showing us those pictures and those graphs were absolutely eye-opening, riveting, and, you know, it helps us to comprehend and understand what's happening. And information like this gives us hope. I'm so grateful to the both of you. I hope that we can have you on again, because it seems to me that although we can hope for a very good ending to this, the battle is still raging, and we're going to have to fight hard together in the future.
Lauren, it was a pleasure.
Remember,
to be
we're stronger. You're stronger than you think you are.
Yes, ma'am. My dad always told me that. He said those exact words, Laura Lynn, you're stronger than you think you are. And we're finding that out. Dr. Palmer, thank you so much. If there's anything more that you want to close on, please give a final word. But thank you so much for your fight, your stand, your sacrifice. Thank you for your sacrifice at this epic time to speak the truth when that has become an act of courage.
Well, I mean, who wants to work at a place in which the truth no longer matters? What's the point? I mean, I'm not really sacrificing anything. Somebody else is sacrificing for me, but there's no reasonable choice anyway. So I'm at peace with anything that happens in this regard. And,
you're an honorable man. And that you're so right. Being able to sleep at night is a gift, because some people can't. Some people live in such a way that they have to look over their back all the time to see who's coming after them, because they're living such a deplorable life. So I thank you for that, sir.
So thank you, and thanks to Catherine. I've been working with Catherine for a while now. She's really a wonderful lady, and I hope you will bring her on the show again. I think she deserves the show all by herself.
Oh, we absolutely will do that. We'd love to have her on. Yes, you both have kind of tied in the medical and the economic side, and working together is very good, because it's all of it that's affecting us, all of it. The thousands of people losing their jobs right now because of the science is just, you know, quite the price to pay. So I appreciate that.
Okay. Well,
thank you, sir.
Thank you.
Yes, God bless you in the future, and we look forward to having you on again, because there's a lot more to tell. Thank you, sir. Thank you, Catherine, and we appreciate.
Thank you. Have a great evening.
Yes, we hope to talk to you again very soon, both of you. Thank you so much. Take care.
Thank you. Thanks.
Oh, man. So that is absolutely phenomenal. When he was describing and showing the science of it, I just have to ask Dr. Teresa Tam, if we know this, and if you're a doctor and you have seen this and you know this, then why are we doing what we're doing? Dr. Bonnie Henry, this is the science. It's plain and simple. If you keep going down the path that you're going, it is going to cost you. It would be better for you to drop out now and take your fall now and end your career with a high note while people still like you, because they're not going to like you much anymore. The vaccinated are going to turn on all of you provincial health officers, because now that group that you kind of enjoyed, you know, even the mainstream media, they don't like what's going on. They're beginning to ask more and more questions. One mainstream media guy asked Dr. Bonnie Henry, how are you going to enforce all of this? And of course she had to admit there's no enforcement. Have yourself a great New Year's party, everyone. And if you get Omicron and you sneeze, make sure you have a tissue nearby to wipe it up. You don't need a booster. You don't need Dr. Anthony Fauci's upcoming vaccine. That man needs to be tried. What is going on? Anyone out there, you look at the science, and what has been presented here by Dr. Palmer is well known in established, you know, fields of medical science. So what are we to do with all of this? All the crazy. The real problem is what we've created. Our society seems to have been ripe and ready for going insane because of fear. Fear has terrified everyone. It's hysterical. I thank you for joining me. I hope we've gone through everything you think we should have.
I think we should run the Christmas one.
The Christmas one?
Yeah.
Okay. Let's run a Christmas, final Christmas video because Christmas is over. But take a look.
Ah, Christmas, the traditional Yuletide holiday. But this